Welcome, everyone, to our Thursday night Stargate Roundtable. Sorry we're a little bit late. We had technical difficulties again this evening, so we apologize for that. We will open with our dear Angel Sue helping us set the tone and getting energy in a good place for us to enjoy a wonderful evening. So, Angel Sue, pass the talking stick to you.
Thank you so much, Marita Robert. And we welcome you all in the light of the most radiant one, and in the office of the Christ, and only in the office of the Christ. And we're invoking the loving energies of Saint Germain and the violet flame here now. So as you are one of the most adored beings here in this whole of creation, the divine child, claim yourself and welcome in your higher self, your beloved twin flame, your guides, your masters, your teachers, your angels, and your councils of light. All those from the lighted realms that honor your path here. And as you're holding so much energies, so many of the different types of frequencies, just claim yourself as being one with all there is. Owati, one with all there is. And think about concerns, the situations that you're going through, your family, your friends, all those that you call your family of the heart. Nasara, the Reformation Act, our Faction 3 White Knights, all those that you're aware of that are going through trials, tribulations, learning opportunities. Clearly, this is the moment. Use that divine reset, the law of one, for ourselves and for the entire planet. And we can use it through time and space for all those that have recently left us, all those that have been gone for quite a long time, all those that are yet to come. So we're just going to hit that highest happiness, highest harmony. We're using that divine neutrality, unconditional neutrality, the perfect, happy, divine solution for everything, ourselves and everything. And so we're calling in all the beings known and unknown, seen and unseen, that are tied in with all these aspects that we carry in our heart, in our head, in our subconscious, in our at-one-ment, to bring about peace, health, harmony, prosperity, sovereignty, freedom, all good things beyond our understanding. And here's where we say, we are all one. When one is harmed, all are harmed. Yet as one is helped, then all are helped. And therefore, in the name of who we are, and we are one with all there is, ask that only the highest good of all concerned happen here. We celebrate this with honey in our hearts and 13 thank yous and all the good things that we can express. And so we say thank you with ending this with we are all one. And so all men, all women, all children, all beings, all creation, we are all one. And so have a divine winter solstice, as that's coming up, and all the frequencies and the energies that are here at this season with so many holidays to celebrate. And I pass that talking stick. Thank you. We love you.
Thank you, Angel Sue. We appreciate you getting us started here this evening and wish you well. Pass the talking stick next to Carolyn and have her help us understand what kind of energies will we be expecting from the Mayan calendar this week.
Okay. Oh, my. Thank you for that talking stick, Maria Roberts. We are in the last wave of the harmonic module that we began, I think it was last March. I was going to look that date up, but I didn't. But we finished this one on Saturday, and so Saturday will be a portal day and Sunday will be a portal day. Today is an 11 Etzab. And 11 is that tone of letting go and disintegration. It's dissonance and it's change. It's spectral. So through destruction there is creation. And then Etznab is the mirror, and it's a warrior aspect. And it's where we work on our groundedness and that wise use of honesty and our self-understanding as we see those reflections of ourselves. Our gifts are scrying the unseen in fluidity and persistence. It's a time to let go of any illusions of separation or separateness. Let go of any fear, any feelings of abandonment, all the illusions. So Etznab is the double-edged sort reflection of our goal to understand ourselves. So with this energy, we do our day to day. And then tomorrow is a 12 Kuok, the storm energy. The Kuok is the storm, and it's the visionary aspect. That 12 tone of that is very powerful. It's complex stability. It's the unity of polarity. And it's called the crystal tone. So with this crystal energy and the storm energy we're working with tomorrow, to create transformation for others and lighting clear thought, that Kuok energy. It's the possibility of freedom and the power of catalyzing. So let go of addiction to crisis, let go of despair and fear and that illusion of separateness again. So we keep doing that. And so there you go. That's Kuok with that 12 crystal clarity about the situation with that sacred tone. And then on Saturday, it's a portal day with a how. It's the last day of the 260-day cycle, so it's like a birthday. If you consider that 260 days of the Mayan matrix, a birthing cycle from your initial intentions to this day of that 9 months birth, it's the gestation of a human birth, so it works out pretty good. And how is the sun? It's the healer. It's the healer aspect as well, and it requires us to rise to Christ consciousness and strive towards wholeness and transmute energy to others. So there you go. That's our job with a how. Our gifts are that possibility thinking and unconditional love and the God self. And it's a time to surrender limitation and separation. So there you go. With that 13 tone of transcendence, the 13 is the universal movement of change. It's cosmic. It's the radical change that is accomplished by shape-shifting with unseen forces. It's time for an interdimensional shift, for shape-shifting, and for a quantum leap. Times the opportunities for change are hidden or unseen. Here there is a holographic evolution into the change. So that's Saturday, and then Sunday, another portal day. If we circle around, we came around the circle, and we start a new matrix. a new harmonic module or a new Zolkin, as it is called. The Loom is the hologram of how the galaxy moves as a self-contained system. The harmonic module with numbers used to represent symbolic qualities, and these are encoded with the potentiality of our reality. So on Sunday, we move back to the beginning with Emish. And as we go through these days, the first wave, it is considered the first wave. And so we declare our intentions for the next 260 days, starting on this Sunday. So, Emish being number 1-1, and as we remember, as we go through the first wave, we are counting the first glyph and the first tone of the first galactic signature, the glyph being a galactic signature, and the sacred tone being the same. As we begin the count in the matrix, that means that each day for the next 13 days we'll have the same tone quality as the glyph quality number. So the first glyph is considered a number 1, Emish. And it's the first day of the wave. So that's also a number one. So as you see, each day after will be a 2-2, a 3-3, a 4-4, a 5-5, etc. So we're potentizing those sacred tones that way by duplicating them. And it reminds me of the galactic dance from the 25th Christmas to the 6th. None of the planets are in retrograde. They're all just right there. It's another kind of alignment, and it's a synchronistic at this time. So the tone one is a unity. It's magnetic. It's receiving. This is the beginning. Tone one represents a unity of one, the clarity of intent, and the creative manifestation. One receives energy from the universe. This is the time of new beginnings. The avant-garde, during this time, concentrate on the oneness of all form. There is no limitation and no separation. This tone represents all that is. So there you go. And then Emish, that's dragon energy. I'm setting my paper down. I don't know where it is. I'll find it in a second. Where Emish. We know what they are anyway without the paper. So that mother, that primordial beginning, that dragon, we know all about mother. She comes and sees us every week. So here we are. Let's find it here. Thank you for your patience. Emish speaks to the powerful position of our initiation. We draw to ourselves the creative forces of the universe. So let go of feelings of lack of support. Trust that the universe will provide and begin to depend on yourself as you commence to setting your wheel in motion. It is important to have clarity of mind, for your intentions will determine what you manifest throughout this unique pattern of space and time. The clearer you are about what you are calling to yourself, the more readily the universe can come to your assistance. This is the source. You are the vortex from where all creation springs. You represent the primordial waters of creation. The vortex exists in both directions at once. It is the prime mover. And that's from Zoe's book, My Teacher. And so there you go. That's Sunday, and then Monday we have Eat the Wind, listening to the voices of spirit guiding us, our guides and ancestors and spirit guides, our angels. So we do that on Monday with Eat. Two is a two, so it's working with that polarity, electric energy. And then Tuesday is a three Akbal, and we work with the night, Akbal, and the three energy of activation. And on Wednesday, a four con, that's that seed energy. And that is Tara's galactic birthday. So how interesting that within 10 days, Rama has his galactic birthday and Tara has hers. And yet they are at opposite ends of the spectrum. Typical twin flames. Okay.
When is my galactic birthday again?
It's Wednesday.
Thursday?
Wednesday. Wednesday, 4 con is on Wednesday, and that's your birthday. A 4-4, very powerful and joyful and ecstatic, 44.
Oh, wow. And so then
yeah, yes, Master, Lady Master, you are a master.
Thank you. I accept that, and it's a lot of hard work, but then I heard Baba say, it's supposed to be hard.
Well, Rama was born in the wave of Lamont, that stargate, and there he is with that seven tone, which is
yeah.
pretty powerful too. So, and Ish, and he's totally your complement because Khan and Ish are opposite each other on the Mayan calendar wheel. He's a 14 and you're a 4, and there's only 10 days difference, which is half of 20, right? It's half the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're exactly
now,
opposite each other.
Tell me again Rama's day of his galactic birthday.
It's a 7-ish. We just had it a few days ago.
Yeah, I just was trying to remember which day it was.
Oh, Saturday.
Saturday.
Or Sunday. It was Sunday. It was Sunday.
Okay, Sunday. Okay,
yeah.
We just got it right now, and it's next Wednesday when I have mine, right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my. Okay, thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I think it's pretty cute. I like it. You guys make a good example of the synchronistic of the Mayan calendar and your choice of each other. So good. And then Thursday is
one of these days I'll have to have
charm.
You look up Robert and mine and see how ours fit together on the Mayan calendar. I never ever thought about it.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
I'll look that up and let you see. It was February 9th, 1935. 1933. Okay, well, I can look it up, and I have to go to a computer to do it.
Yeah. Did you get a computer now?
I do have a computer that I can use for email, but I can't use it for anything else.
Okay.
I mean,
all right.
It's really old.
Okay.
Well, if
didn't
anybody
know
has one.
Right. Well, I told them to call you on your phone, and I thought after when you said that, I thought, well, maybe I should be telling them to call you on Skype. So thank you. We appreciate you bringing us up to date on this. Do you have anything else you want to complete with?
Well, I wanted to complete with Thursday, which is Christmas Eve day, being a 5 Chi Chong, which is that snake energy. It's body sensing. So it's very physical. It's a warrior aspect, and it's about remaining open to change and distinguishing between body and soul. And then on Friday, which is Christmas Day, I will mention, it is a 6 Kimi. And Kimi being that linker of worlds. What a beautiful day for Christmas. It's about forgiveness and moving into a state of grace and being the world bridger, bridging the past, between the past and the future, and transmutation. So Merry Christmas, everyone, and I pass the talking stick.
Well, thank you very much. And just as a reminder of questions we've had, we will plan to be here on Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve as we always have, and we'll see what shows up as the program for that evening. That is still to be determined for sure, but we will have a call, so just to let you know. So, Tara and Rama, have you talked to anybody out there today, Rama, and what have you watched, Tara, and just catch us up here. We have about a half hour until Omina will be on, and our guests spot. So that's
that
about.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
All right.
Rama, you had some amazing little conversations here today.
I can say, for one thing, these solar flares are kicking my ass.
Oh, you're a beautiful bum.
Yeah. A friend of mine sent me this 24-minute video talking about the solar flares coming in from the sun, and also this very unusual planet, or let's say possibly dead star, some kind of body.
Oh, you talked about it. You said I forgot what it was now. Okay, I'll look it up.
It's at the edge of our solar system, beyond the edge of Pluto, going almost into the Oort cloud. Yet this planet, dead star, let's say, you know, the way that it's being described, it has NASA and everybody and their dog standing on end, because it is affecting the entire solar system, and it's increasing its speed as it comes into the solar system. Some folks are hinting at it being Nibiru, yet Nibiru is, you know, in orbit around the sun. So I'm not sure exactly what this body is, yet it's got everybody in the scientific community twirling their hair.
It's a dwarf star. A dwarf star.
Yeah.
And that means it kind of goes, it explodes and then it dwarfs itself.
That's right.
And
kind of on its way out of existence.
Well, except that it takes forever.
Right. Then it becomes a black.
Does that make it then really dense? If it
Yes. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
Then as it slowly dies, to use that term, it becomes a black hole eventually.
Which is a creation chamber with dark matter inside.
Yeah.
Yet inside at the depths of the dark matter is this incredible light.
That's right.
Which is the creation chamber or the womb space in space.
Yeah. And what I've heard lately is just, you know, to put it succinctly,
but they said it was a companion. It's being a companion to Nibiru.
Yeah,
and that it's affecting our whole solar system, exerting its own gravitational field across the whole solar system. And then you asked, "Is this a good thing?" You asked that to Nassim Haramein.
Yes,
and
yes.
He said, "He said it's a good thing, Lord Rama, as it is raising the frequency of every living thing, whether it is animal, vegetable, or mineral. And across the planet, there is also fear being poured out.
Right.
And those who are reacting to the fear are collecting food and making more underground bunkers, as
right.
they are afraid it is the end of the world as we know it. Nassim said it's the end of the old order, and
right.
we're seeing the rhetoric of the old order escalate the fear and the fascination with the dark side. And that this is why the movie is out. Part three, Childhood's End.
Yes.
And in the part three, the children are becoming fully self-aware of their siddhas, their spiritual power and ability. Yet they are choosing to wield this power over others with them. choosing the dark side of the force.
Yes.
Them choosing the dark side of the
force. They're not exactly using it in the right way. And the way that they portrayed the ETs in this movie, it's right out of the CIA, which influences Hollywood.
Yeah, and that's right.
One of the ETs, or one or two of them, they showed in this movie, you know, looks like this giant version of Pan, or, you know, the Horned God, like in the movie Legend with Tom Cruise.
But it's a goat-headed god.
It's a goat-headed god.
Which is the devil in the Tarot.
Yeah.
Number 15.
With the bat wings. And this is not how, you know, I have sat, I don't know how many thousands of times with the Galactic Councils. They don't look like this.
Yeah, in other words, this is propaganda, everybody.
That's right.
So we can let it go at that. So then,
actually, Arthur C. Clarke in the original...
Well,
let me finish.
They torqued it. They
in
it
the original book by Arthur C. Clarke, it's got a very happy ending where there is this golden age on the planet. And, well, of course, Hollywood, CIA, all CIA, duh.
Yeah, and they pretty much, you know, it was a defamation of character as far as that goes.
That's right.
For the nature of Arthur C. Clarke's work.
Yeah.
Okay, so Nassim said that this ties into the larger agenda of the 13 families who want to play their last final card. A fake alien invasion like Independence Day kind.
Right.
And Mark Levine said Janet Yellen raised the interest rate that was...
Yesterday.
No, Janet Yellen did that. Okay. Yeah, she is the new one. Today, close to...
Yesterday.
Well, 25 points from a 0.25% to... Yeah, it was yesterday... to 0.5%. The action will begin the end of the present day global economy. And this marks the end of the global elite and all of their plans of mice and men. And then Ram said, well, so commanders, where is Nassara in all of this great saga? And Mark Levine said, as we all watch the global elite steadily global elite's steady demise, Nassara shall arise. Isn't that cute? Out of the dust of the ashes of the old evil order. Then Ram asked, and where might I ask is the man with the gold at the end of the rainbow, Master Saint Germain? Nassim said, out of that dark rift, you will see Sekhmet. Of the place of the beginning of, Lady of the place of the beginning of time. You are going to see Goddess with the gold. Nassara now, have a nice day, Lord. Bye.
Yeah.
So they're leaving it that, and of course the reports are toning everything down and saying it's not going to affect this, that, or the other. Maybe the emerging economy, emerging businesses, you know, smaller businesses. And raising the interest rate sucks money that was out there for free, basically, you know, very cheap, and it sucks it back into the country. So it does have an effect. Yet there's other things that we know about that are going on that's not part of this particular piece or report. Right, Rama?
Yes. And it's got all the countries of the world very concerned because ultimately they are reshuffling old tired paper that doesn't have any value, but they put value on the paper.
And the European central bankers are absolutely not going to collaborate.
Max Kaiser was tearing his hair out this morning.
Oh, you got to watch him.
Yeah, it was just, you know, the bond markets, the issues that are going on with, you know, Mr. George Osborne over there with Mr. Cameron, and how they're trying to distract us on a huge level with this, you know, very fake story called IS. I'm only going to use
ISIL.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is that on another note, these recovery numbers in the United States are fake.
Yes.
And the people who have gotten jobs, it brings it to 5%. But it's only doing that because they're not counting all the people that left the market and that stopped trying. And there are gazillions of people like that.
And
the people that are working are making money that is not making it. In other words, they're making way less money, downgraded everything. So it's a very false report.
Yeah. And
do they count people on assistance? No.
And Michael Moore, in the last 24 hours, got in front of Trump Tower with a sign saying, "We are all Muslims." And he stood there with the sign until the cops showed up and kindly asked him to leave. And he put a letter out to Donald Trump across, you know, the internet, and basically it was just saying, you know, I had an interview, I was on a show with you a few years back, and in that interview...
What, it was saying he was on a show with Donald Trump?
Michael Moore was on the show with Donald Trump, and the producers of the show were very concerned Michael Moore was going to pick on Donald Trump. And Michael Moore said to Donald Trump in the letter, "If you're such a, you know, scaredy cat of me, you know, how can you get out there and, you know, scream to high heaven, Sig Heil, and, you know, yell that, you know, the Islamic caliphate is coming to get us. Your kids and your, you know, wives, be very afraid as you take your children to the school bus stop, you know, because Al-Qaeda or ISIL may be coming to kill your children as they get on the bus."
Oh.
This is the fear factor of what Donald Trump is putting out. Michael Moore is calling him out on it and saying, you know, we got a real problem here with Mr. Hitler.
Okay, so
yeah.
On top of this, there is a new 7-hour-long documentary. And quite a resource here of more political disclosure, historical and immediate, looking for heart balance, expanding here. And you can go to collective-evolution.com, 2015/10/27. Professors, politicians gather to warn us about the New World Order, NWO. That's a forward slash. And I'm just going to read this thing at the beginning. It says, quote, "We are dealing with a criminal undertaking at a global level, and there is an ongoing war. It is led by the United States. It may be carried out by a number of proxy countries, which are obeying orders from Washington. The global war on terrorism is a United States undertaking, which is fake. And it's based on fake premises. It tells us that somehow America and the Western..." Here, I got to give this to you, Rama. You got to put it back on. I'm supposed to. I'm sorry. That somehow America and the Western world are going after a fictitious enemy, the ISIL, as in fact, ISIL is fully supported and financed by the Western military alliance and America's allies in the Persian Gulf. They say Muslims are terrorists, yet it just so happens that terrorists are made in America. They are not the product of Muslim society, and that should be abundantly clear to everyone on this floor. The global war on terrorism is a fabrication, a big lie, and a crime against humanity. The quote above comes from prominent author and Canadian economist, Dr. Michael, it's just spelled M-I-C-H-E-L, Chasidovsky, who is the University of Ottawa's emeritus professor.
And this man knows a whole lot about the ETs.
So we're going to start playing this stuff as we go along. I'm just saying.
Tara, yes. Can you give that website again where that 7 hour is now that people have a pencil in their hand?
Okay. Okay, it's collective-evolution.com. collective-evolution.com/2015/10/27/ And then this thing I'm going to read has a hyphen between each and every word. So it's professors, politicians, gather to warn us about the New World Order. And then there's one more thing after that, hyphen NWO, but there's a hyphen between each word, and then forward slash. Professors and politicians gather to warn us about the New World Order. 7+ hours, amazing resource.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's and about 10 till the hour, so... we have about 10 minutes here before Omina time, so that'll just keep you aware of what you got to do.
Well, also, we're coming up on the 29th of December on, how many years, Rama?
This is the 125th year of the
anniversary. Anniversary,
yeah,
of Wounded Knee.
Yes, and it's time to pardon Leonard Peltier.
Yep.
He is innocent of all the charges. This was, once again...
I don't know, but you have to ask your people, is it possible for Barack to do that, to pardon him?
Tom the Cat told me today, yes, it is.
So what did you ask Tom the Cat? Is he going to do that?
Somebody's going to whisper in Mr. Barack's ear and say it's time that you pardon Leonard Peltier.
Look, and he can do that anytime.
Bill Clinton pardoned his friend Mark Rich, who still...
Wrong pardon.
Yeah.
Wrong, going the Congo.
Which goes into the whole Leo Wanta story, and we ain't going there.
No, I just want to say, though, there's this other thing. That is so huge.
Yep.
That is so big. Now, you know, what it's laying out is that there has to be the arrests. I mean, this is what the half a million folks are going to get arrested for. They're all doing something that has caused every single amazing, possible, imaginable type of death you can think up. How many people are dead? 2 million plus of our American soldiers are dead in Iraq just from that invasion and occupation. They're still haven't spoken. I heard last week, Tom Hartman was off the air. He was doing something. And Danielle and
Shano,
his producers, along with his wife, took over the show. And last Thursday, a week ago today, Danielle said, what did she say now? She said 1 to 2 million U.S. soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
She mentioned that. No, she said 1 to 2 million Iraqis are dead. Yeah. But nobody's ever even said that.
Yeah.
I went, oh, my God. So I saved that one. Oh, the birth defects, yes. Not
depleted uranium.
There are birth defects in Flint, Michigan.
Yes.
Babies that were born in the last year, their mothers were drinking lead-poisoned Flint River water. And there's brain damage in the children and the babies and the kids.
Isn't that where Michael Moore is from, Flint, Michigan?
Yeah.
It is. And I don't know, but I was just going to... Did you ask Tom to find out if he knows what's going on there? He must.
I asked, and he said Michael Moore's going to be coming out with a new movie very soon, and the title of this movie is What Country Are We Going to Invade Next?
Oh, dear. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Planet Xenu?
Oh, yes. We just pick and choose.
Yeah. Also, it was an anniversary of first year anniversary on Tuesday, was it? Of this thing that happened in Pakistan.
Yeah.
146, mostly young people were killed. In their school in Pakistan. And it's just a deeply personal experience when you're listening to, there was this young man, he was on, Lawrence O'Donnell brought him on, but he was shot in his arms, on both arms, and he doesn't really have very much of a use of his wrist since they were shot up there around the elbow. And things like that. And his brother, who was right behind him, was shot dead. And his teacher was killed. And it just brought up Sandy Hook, but only multiply it by, eight times, the deaths at point blank. And I'm just going to tell you that the groups that are doing all these things are all set up and funded by the West. All of them. When you hear Boko Haram, you've got United States Black Ops with their allies, meaning Israel and Saudi Arabia in particular, and Egypt, and look what they've done to those Yemenis people. I'm just saying we are responsible now to keep on keeping on. And
And Burundi, the country of Burundi, is on the brink of civil war. They're doing so many atrocities.
Well, that's an interesting story. Thank you, Ramon.
Yeah.
Speak about that. Where did I
get that? Yeah, Leslie Marshall was in tears talking about that this afternoon.
Oh, that's just it's something from it goes back to Bill Clinton. I'm going to put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. Burundi, on the brink of atrocities and civil war, sparked by President Pierre Nkurunziza, his decision to run for a third term in April, which he then won. The opposition says that violates the Constitution's two-term limit. The United Nations says hundreds of people have been killed, over 400, in that arrest. The organization accused both sides of reigniting.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm on. I'm here.
Oh, okay. Hold on 1 second, Lady Master. The UN announced it is deploying investigators to prevent the violence from spiraling out of control. Protests between supporters of the Hutu majority government, and the opposition Tutsis. Mm-hmm. Escalation began really started in July, on the 3rd of July, as he won his term. And his win spurred more bloodshed. And to date, 350,000 people of the country have fled because of this. And there's supposed to be a special United Nations envoy to get into that situation and help the changes made. So I guess we can stop right there. But let's just put all situations at the core cause and conditions of our black operatives and all other black ops in the world. May that root be picked out of the earth, and may a sprout of new flowers grow. And I pass the talking stick back to you, Marita Robert.
Hello. Okay.
Where's Marita? Marita?
Well, this is Omina.
Okay, I'm here. I had muted myself so that when I was typing, it didn't make a noise. Sorry.
That's okay.
So, well, we have Omina as our guest again, and she's going to be talking about the synergy of the energy of the soul. And I'm sure that there'll be a lot of people who will want to call in and ask her questions. So I'm going to go ahead and give the phone number right away. So if you want to get a pencil. 888-429-5471. 888-429-5471. And another number would be 530-413-9537. So, Omina, tell
yes.
us what you want to share with us tonight.
Well, good evening, everybody. I thought that I would talk about the gifts of the soul, which is a synergy of energy between love, free will, the heart light, liberty, individuality, talent, and creation. And one of the quotes that I have from Lazarus is, life is a gift from the God, Goddess, and all that is. Yours is to learn to receive. So of all our listening audience, hopefully everybody is going to receive tonight, and of course, they can call in and ask anything that they want, what we're talking about, or even if it's not what we're talking about. So I would start, and of course, feel free to interrupt me if you want to ask any questions. I'm going to start with love, the creed of love. And love spells light, oneness, vitality, and eternity. And light is to illuminate the pathways of a soul's journey and to enlighten one's experiences when it may have forgotten their spiritual heritage. Oneness is within the essence of oneness. We all will prevail and manifest into the reality of hopes, dreams, and visions in all that one soul wishes to create and experience. We all have the power to do this. And the vitality, of course, the radiant glimmer of divinity, the blue flame of energy, and the true essence of one's soul. And some out there may not be feeling a lot of vitality, so we have to bring in more love and light into their souls. Eternity is the God, Goddess, created spirit. Soul is a gift to spirit, and spirit is forever. I mean, I could go on with that, but I won't. I'll go on with it later if we need to do more of that. Now, free will is definitely a gift. It's given without judgment, retribution, or interference from the God Goddess. It is a power that binds all beings to their spiritual heritage with the ability to create from their own celestial hearts. Free will allows each individual soul to choose their own destiny by using the gifts of creation, which allow them to create the life they desire. And liberty, that a lot of people give their lives for. Oh, where's my liberty? Is the freedom to be individual and to create and to do as they feel for the higher good. Any questions, anybody?
Sounds good. Keep going.
Okay, all souls have the liberty and the freedom to create every thought and action. Remember, everything begins with a thought, and it's amazing how it manifests. And for some people, it manifests very quickly. So it's always really good to check our thoughts and see if they're for the higher good. It's just a way of doing mindful meditation, actually. And our individuality, as we all know, we're very individual, and at the same time, we have a lot of the same things. But individuality for souls, they have the ability to express their individual creativity through all thoughts and action. So we have that energy going where we have the thought, then we have our individual selves will definitely express that. And there is a holy writ, and it's the communion among souls to create and manifest their natural gifts into thoughts and actions. And their talent, of course, is the art of integrating all thoughts, actions, and manifestation for the higher good for all souls on their sacred journey. We're always on a sacred journey, even at times if we're experiencing it in a negative way, we're still on our journey. And of course, creation, well, you all know what creation is, but the gift of creation allows spirit to realize, create, and experience their spirituality through the soul's individual creativity. Upon that realization, when the soul's gift of free will becomes aligned with the God-Goddess will, then the soul can become one with their creator and return to their celestial home. And we really don't return there until we're totally finished. So, and of course, each of us as souls choose to use the gift of creation because it's given pure energy. And we are totally responsible for the use or misuse of that energy. And of course, all creation is subject to the natural law of creation. And where there's an action, there's a reaction. But if it's in the natural sense, it usually has negative consequences. anything else you want to know about the law of creation?
How can we do this in the physical world for ourselves?
Okay, well, all energy has the polarization of positive and negative, and is kept in balance through the equal use of negative and positive energies by the assertion of the natural law of consequences. I think sometimes what people misunderstand is that, like, all energy has to have that balance of positive and the negative. What we think in our heads as negative is oftentimes the wrong way of thinking. So we have to remember that the polarization of positive and negative energy is not a negative thing. It's a balanced it's a balanced thing between all energies. And of course, everything is energy on the earth. But if it's out of balance, and as you can see with everything that's going on in the world today, it's definitely out of balance because it's misuse of energy. People are misusing their energy and their power. So it's about keeping in our minds to begin with a thought of positive energy. And if negative stuff comes in, then just to transform that into a positive thought. So it's a way of every day learning how to think positively, even if everything around you is negative. Again, I'll go back to I bless everybody. I have God bless everybody. That's my positive way of doing it. When there's nothing else I can do about it, then I'll even bet. Bless Mr. Trump.
Okay.
Because, he's still, Mr. Trump is still doing everything that he can to upset everybody, or it appears that way. I don't know if that's his intention, but it most certainly appears that way. So, of course, all of us as souls have our own personal consciousness from which that we can create. And we have to really look at our lives and see how we manifest our energy all around us. And that's for everybody that has a relationship with each other, and that's how we're all tied together. The love that binds us, so to speak, using our free will. The heart light is really interesting because from my experience, each soul that's created are giving a certain amount of light. It's the heart light. And everybody's is different. But the heart light is really, it's the foundation of in the individual souls. And as the soul grows, so does the light. And each soul is imprinted with the meaning of the light as a reminder of the God, God is in all creation, because light is the foundation of freedom that embodies us. And, of course, the light does embody the liberty, the individuality, the gifts, the holy writ, the talent, all of that. But let's say when you're done with your journey on earth and you go back to the creator or whatever your belief system is, because it's all energy, we're still going back. And this is where free will comes in. Well, now you're going to stand there in front of the karmic board, let's say. They're not going to tell you what you did wrong or anything else. There's no judgment around all of that. They just want to know, how did you use your light? So I think if people think about themselves as light and how do they use their energy, because we're all responsible for ourselves and we're all responsible for how we use a free will. So also we're responsible how we use the heart light. And how do we do it as individuals using our talent and our creation? Anybody, any comments about that? Because people out there may have very different ideas than I do. And I'm most certainly going to discuss them.
What might be the difference between when you're talking about the heart light or the soul light, are the different, are you using these terms interchangeably, or are they different?
No, they're not. They're all much the same. There is energy of energy. I mean, love is definitely universal. The heart light has to do with how you use the energy from the heart.
Okay.
And that can grow or it can diminish, depending on how you use your free will to create, or if you misuse your energy. Your heart light is kind of like your energy in a sense. So, of course, that would definitely be up to the individual and how they use that in terms of their soulality and their personality, because there's often a big battle between that, because the personality is driven by the ego, and that can be the negative or the positive aspects of it. And the soul, of course, is always going for the higher good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about becoming aware on how we see things in the world, how we think about things in the world, what our belief systems are meant to be challenged, because we get new information all the time and it changes our belief systems about who we are as an individual and how we affect other individuals in our lives just by our attitudes. You know, we're very powerful beings. We can bring people up or bring people down. As we know, because the world does that. The people in the world are doing that. So, and each soul, of course, is imprinted with the creed of love and the free will and the heart light and the liberty and the vision. It's almost like the blueprint of the soul. And how would you manifest it in everyday life? All the creative people out there would have to tell me how they individually manifest it, or what is stopping them to manifest it. What's stopping them from manifesting it? And most of you on board, I'm sure, are using your energy for the higher good.
Mm-hmm. So fear of failure? Okay, we have Meadow from New York on line two. So Meadow, speak out and let's hear your question.
Hi, Marietta. Hi, Omina. I love you.
Hi.
I was wondering if I'm following my soul's purpose, and have I had many past lives?
Tell me your name again.
Meadow.
Meadow. Oh, I see flowers all over you when I hear Meadow. Well, some of your soul's purpose right now is to do some healing that you have to do that you brought in from a past life. You came in with the fear of rejection and the fear of abandonment. They were your two big things that you're working on.
Yes.
And that's part of your journey right now. Because once you heal those, then you become freer. Where your security within yourself outweighs the fear.
Okay.
You've asked me how many past lives you had?
Yeah, did I have many or, you know?
You've had 425.
Wow.
I know, we think that's an awful lot, but you got to remember there's no time to the soul.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Can you tell me what my most recent past life was?
Well, it appears that in your soul's journey, you were very creative. And some of that comes in right now that you're not using all your creativity the way that you need to.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you're artistic or not, but it looks like in your last lifetime you were. You did a lot of painting.
Oh, because I want to be, but I never make the time for it.
Well, the time, that's because of your fear of failure around it. You don't make the time because you don't think you're good enough to do it.
That's so true.
And you have to remember that artistic creativity is very individual. You're the only one that has to love it and approve of it.
Oh, that's a good way of thinking of it.
So keep that in mind and just start doing it. You also had a lifetime as a writer. So you need to get back into that to help you become more articulated in how you want to say things or see them, which will also help you with your artistic talents.
Oh,
you also have healing hands.
Oh, that's true. I do. I heal my pets.
Yes. Well, you might want to expand it to yourself and other people in your life, especially start off with yourself, especially to heal some of your, there seems to be grief around you from this lifetime. So you might want to use your healing hands. You rub them together, put them on your chest when you're going to meditate or sleep at nighttime. It'll activate the natural healer in you, and it'll help move some of that energy.
Oh, great. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Anybody else want to ask a question? Anybody on the team have something that they want to ask before we take another caller?
Well, let me just, Mamina, it's Kathy in the background here.
Hi,
I was
Kathy.
Just going to say if there's anything that you would share with us about the ending of this year and moving into the next year, anything that you see that we should be all collectively working on or be aware of?
Well, I think that all collectively that we could all just have positive thoughts about peace and bless everybody. That means everybody. Try not to have any judgment about everything that's going on. Try to put it in a place that we ask the God Goddess to bless the less fortunate, the violent ones, because that's the only thing that's going to change some of this energy that's going on right now. And especially for all the losses, this is the time of year where it becomes a very sad time for people. And I think it's sad all the time. It just becomes more pronounced at this time of the year around the holidays. So I always send out healing energy to everybody. And, of course, we all would love world peace. So the more of us that do that, then hopefully that'll be strong enough to move some of the energy. I can't give you anything specific about the end of the year other than maybe we'll all make resolutions. We always make resolutions. I don't know how many of you are able to keep them. I can't keep any of them, so I give up making them. You know, because it's kind of like I'm just gonna go on the wave and do the best I can, and that's how I'll probably start out the new year. I am going to, though, some of the stuff I discussed tonight, they're parts of my book on the soul, so hopefully next year my goal will be to have that published.
Fabulous. Do you have a name?
Yes,
for your book?
It would be, there's a lot of stuff in there, so all positive thoughts towards that would be gratefully appreciated, and I would bless every single one of you, which I do anyway, but I'll bless you twice as much. Like all those archangels, huh?
Yeah. I was going to say, have you had any intuitive hits about this new year coming?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't. No, I think it's, well, I shouldn't say I don't. I think it's going to be a, I think it's going to be a lot more positive year than it has been in the last couple of years. I think that, let me ask my guides and see what they say. Oh, I can tell you, they're telling me right now that they're working very, very hard on the Earth's energy and trying to shift it and trying to protect. That's what they are doing, and that we are not to lose hope, and that they will not allow major man-made disasters. They won't interfere with the Earth's natural way of moving the way it does. But they will not allow any major disasters that will annihilate some of us. They will, that will not happen. People are worried about that, but that's not going to happen. So they are definitely putting a lot of energy in the right places, and they're putting a lot of protection in the right places. Yeah. Because believe it or not, there's more good people on the Earth than there are negative people.
Yeah.
So we have to hold that. We have to really hold that and put out that positive energy for 2016, and bless all the less fortunate than we are, and all the ones that are more fortunate than we are.
Amen.
So that's about all I can tell you about it, because I don't think that my style of work really goes into that. Some people are great at that. I'm just not great at that.
Yeah. Thank you, though. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay. This is the toll-free phone number for Canada and the United States, 888-429-5471, 530-413-9537. If you want to call in and ask a question, that's how you can do it. So, all right. See if we have anyone else here. I don't see anybody else on the team want to ask a question.
Well, maybe I'll just go ahead and entertain all of you.
All right. Just go ahead with your presentation then.
Oh, well, I can just go on about the human consciousness of the soul.
Okay.
How about that?
We always enjoy that, Omina.
Well, of course, my mission is educating people about the soul. That's really my mission. So that's why I talk so much about it. And, of course, the soul consciousness is the inner consciousness of the individual soul. And it's the guiding light of power, love, wisdom, which guides us towards our higher good. And it stores the archives of our soul's history, which most of us are not aware of. So we have the four lower bodies of the human soul. Okay, that's part of the blueprint, and it consists of energies that vibrates and adapts through evolution to mental, emotional, etheric, and physical bodies of humankind. So the four lower ones are the mental body, which of course is the brain that was created to program and hold patterns of thoughts, hopefully of perfection for humankind's manifestation. Then we have the emotional body, and we had talked about that. Some of us are emotional bodies, others are mental bodies. And, of course, that was created for the purpose of experiencing the virtues of the three spiritual bodies and for feeling all thoughts of the mental body. Sometimes it's kind of hard to feel it. When you think something, sometimes it's hard to feel it. If you're having a hard time feeling it, then you have to work on connecting the two. The etheric body is the seat of memory created to record all that is experienced by individual soul, the soul's mental and emotional body, so everything is recorded in the etheric body. And, of course, the physical body is the vehicle in which the soul experiences the four lower bodies of humankind and all possible perfection in a godly manner. We would only wish, because I constantly have to practice every day to do things in a godly manner, and that's a big challenge for me.
We do have Carlton on line two.
Okay, Carlton.
Welcome back.
Okay.
Thank you. Welcome to you.
Thank you, Miss Amina. Hey, listen, well, I'm lucky enough that whenever you're on, I happen to be able to listen in. So you were asking us, hey, what else do we want to ask you? I'll tell you this. Probably, I don't know what the percentage is, but many of us listening to this call We are, we honor and we're in touch with our divinity, and we share that love and divinity and consciousness with each one of us. We want to make this, continue to walk in divine light and make this world a better place. And but it seems like in the reality that we're in, we can't seem to get our hands on enough funds or manifestation to continue to accomplish our goals and our higher purpose. What do you think you could the Creator is trying to share with us right now to help get us and help us to get in more alignment?
I would think that the Creator
with manifestation.
Yeah, I would think that the Creator would want to remind you that everything begins with the individual. So we are holding the love, the compassion, and we're holding the light every day, regardless of what's going on around us, that we keep doing that, it becomes infectious with other people, especially if you're in a place where you have like-minded people, that's even shown towards each other, and it's even shown towards other people that you may not even like. But you don't have to like people to accept them. You don't have to like them to bless them. You don't have to like them to throw a ball of light towards them. Because the light part is from the personality, but if we're coming from our spiritual selves, then we most certainly can see them as spiritual regardless of what they're doing and sending out those positive thoughts. We're in a much better place than most of us think we are. And also the other part that is lacking amongst most individuals, even when we're doing our really good work, is to trust that it's working.
Yeah.
Because if it wasn't working, most of us would probably be dead. Okay?
Yeah.
So we do see the light. Most of us do see the light. A lot of people are afraid of it. And the reason why we have a fear around the light is because we've misused our energy. So we're afraid to go there. Because you've got to remember, when you go into the light, everything is shown to you. The good, the bad, the ugly, the indifferent, whatever it is. And we have to try and look at it objectively. And if we don't like what we see, bless it. That's what I do. It works. It really does work. And I would say that for all the wonderful thoughts and things that you're doing, keep doing them.
T-R-U-S-T, trust. That's a very important reminder.
Yes. Trust, non-trust is a huge blocker to most things. Because if we do it from our divine selves, then we have to look at it as everything is in divine order.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if we keep putting out those thoughts and keep putting out those visuals, then everything is in divine order. I would definitely be one of your cheerleaders to say, keep doing what you're doing.
Well, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for that encouragement, and I just send you light and love and encouragement as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks, Marita. Bye-bye.
You're welcome, and thanks for calling in. We'll accept your call anytime. Anybody else want to ask a question here? 888-429-5471.
Come up with some nice, good, challenging questions for me. I love challenging questions.
Okay. So what's my soul purpose? Why am I here? Isn't that what everybody wants to know?
Well, you know, it's interesting that I think our ego demands that we should be doing something fantastic. And I have no idea what that means, that we're doing something fantastic. Because I think we're all doing something fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really, our soul's purpose really is to honor who we are, get to know who we are, do our healing journey, and accept everybody for where they're at. I mean, that's one of the big purposes. But the major purpose is to find our way back to our celestial family. And we can do that in the flesh. You don't have to pass from this world to do that. You can do that right in the flesh. Just with our emotions, with our thoughts, we can walk around being the king of our souls or have a king soul. We're back into different souls types, but it's about being able to see the light within ourselves, or visualize. If I were to ask all of you in the round table and you were to look at your heart, could you tell me what color the light is or how big it is?
No.
Well, you can all think about that. You don't have to answer it. But most certainly, I would definitely suggest that it's a great exercise to do in a form of mindful meditation. If you can't see it, imagine it, because it's real. And or you can have it shown to you.
And so this is very different from looking at yourself from the chakra point of view and the colors that were designated for them. This is a personal, what are you emanating?
Yes, I think absolutely, because it's very individual. Everybody has a different light for a different purpose. And how they use that light or misuse it, that's what creates the karma. And that's what creates a lot of the disharmony within the self and within other people and government, and you name it. It's all part of it. The soul light, the heart light, is not part of the primitive body. You know, our physical bodies is the primitive part of us, believe it or not.
I was going to say, before we get to Charlene, we do have Charlene here on the line. I was going to say, can you look at someone's heart chakra and say what color it is? What's the emanating color coming from an individual?
Usually I can, after get rid of all the blocks.
So what color am I?
Is this Kathy that's talking?
It is.
Okay, Kathy. Give me permission, Kathy, because I need that.
Okay, well, you have it.
Okay, thank you. Yours is coming up. It's like a candle flame. It's about 3 inches high. The lower part is white, and it's surrounded. The top part is green, and it's surrounded by green.
Well, that was the color that I had given myself, the green.
Well, now you have confirmation.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
It's always nice to get confirmation, isn't it?
So. Oh, it's always wonderful. I love when I get it, so.
We have Charlene.
Charlene?
Say hello, Charlene.
Hello, Charlene.
Hello, Charlene.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome. So what would you like
to say? I am new to your radio station, and the energy just feels so good that I thought I would actually call in. I heard you mention something about past lives to a previous caller, so I was curious for my own. You know, I think we've all had at least someone tell us, you know, what our past lives may have been. But I also experienced a life between life session. Dr. Michael Newton,
a
hypnotherapist. Yeah, so I had a personal, you know, one-on-one, basically, experience of some past life. So I am curious, because I know they tie in, because because it's one soul and different lives. Is that something that you can share with me, like what my last past life was?
Well, I most certainly can look, and when it comes in, I'll tell you, so give me a minute. You're a little, you're a little closed down. I don't know if you're aware of that or not. You made a decision about somewhere in this lifetime to shut down your emotions. That's interfering, right? Huh?
Yeah, it's a survival mechanism, you know, with the
depression. Well, I know it is, and absolutely a survival mechanism. I would just want to make you aware you're still in survival mode. So
I don't want to be anymore.
Huh?
I don't want to be anymore. I've actually been trying for the last 2 years to, you know, open up the heart and to feel and to be, you know, give blessings for the various degrees and aspects.
Well, this is about self-healing, okay? So I just want you to focus on that. Not so much to go out there to the world and do all whatever you do, but to begin to, because you want to heal some of your own stuff first so that you can open up your heart more. You have it very protected, There's a couple of very big, heavy shields around it, back and front. You can ask to have them removed because you're not in front of me. I wouldn't dare remove them. If you're in front of me, I would, but I wouldn't do that because right now I'm just talking to you, and I think you have to do it gently. Okay. The only thing you need to have to do is have a willingness for it to happen and allow it to happen. They're the two things. Your fear right now is bigger than your need to open it up because you're not too sure what it is might come to you, or you're not too sure what might be on the other side. So again, we're back to trust. So I would suggest if you do have people that work with you, have them definitely do some work with you there. So that might be a good way for you to start or get some books to read on it. And again, I'm going to have you in your own mind ask about what's the color of your light, how big is it, and how can you use it for healing.
Okay.
And that would be to where it might help you. Ask for the help to get out of survival mode that you would like to start living.
Okay, sounds like a plan.
Well, I wish you luck with it, because remember, when we're in survival mode, it becomes such a comfortable place to be that we think it's real.
Yes, and we have these reactionary, I have these reactionary modes where, you know, it's that comfort zone, and it's, to me, my goal is to get to that love. Focus on that.
It begins with self, though. Love begins with loving yourself enough to allow somebody else to love you. It also has to do with you receiving. Somebody wants to do something for you, let them. That means you begin to open to receiving, okay?
That's very nice. Any luck with the past life thing?
Oh, I wasn't on that one at all because I think you asked about your soul's purpose. Okay, let me see. They're not showing me. I don't know why they're not showing me any of your past lives.
Ooh, maybe this is my first. No, just kidding.
No. This is not your first one. This is about your. you've had 531. This is your 531st past life.
Wow, that is a lot of lives. Thank you.
Well, you know, you could have an awful lot of fun discovering them all.
That would be a
way of opening you up.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, I had that Life Between Life session with the Dr. Michael Newton.
And how was that Life Between Life? What did you do?
Amazing. It was a series of three sessions. It turned out to be four. The first one was just allowing myself to relax, which is, definitely been a challenge, but baby steps, and get better and more practice. And then the second one was an experience in a past life, and what I experienced was basically a personality that had it was a male. I was a male that I thought I killed my wife in a car accident. So it blocked my heart. So I didn't, she'd passed away and I didn't open my heart. What's that?
That person that you talked about killing is in this lifetime with you now.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, my spouse is actually, I was directed divinely to go to my spouse. I didn't want to, but after three statements from, my spirit guide or some divine voice instructed me to, go.
Yes.
The first two times I said no, and the third time there was no doubt that I was to obey that direction.
Yes.
It was strong, forceful, loving. But there was no doubt, no question in my mind that I was not to say no again. So,
yes.
So, we got married. And so there is that divine connection there, which I am so blessed and grateful for.
I would suggest that you do some meditation on self-forgiveness and let go of your guilt.
Right. So the third session that I had, the Life Between Life, allowed me to heal part of that because it was a block. So So it showed, I was shown another life where basically I was shot in the back. I was Native American and got shot in the back. I was in the wrong place or wrong time or whatever. But the connection of those two lives was shown to me that it wasn't my fault. And so that provided tremendous healing. The car accident wasn't my fault in that one, that first life I experienced. And the healing was so amazing.
That doesn't mean that we don't feel guilt over it.
Right, right. But what's really cool, to wrap this up, is that the last session was actually the soul of existence, my experience, and all those questions, you know, what's your soul purpose, da-da-da, the whole nine yards. I had one sheet back-to-back full of questions, and they all got answered, and I was standing in front of this council of about seven beings.
Yeah. Oh, that's the comic board.
Council of Elders?
No, comic board.
Karmic board.
Comic. K-A-R-M-I-C. I think that's how you spell it. Yeah. Look up what the comic board is. There's seven beans on it.
Yeah, and it was so amazing. Well, yeah, and at one point there was an energy, like, discussion, transference of energy and information back and forth, and come to find out, I'm a member of this board, but I'm in a baby version. I'm a young soul, I guess. But,
well, it's most certainly have lots of opportunities to learn, and you will learn a lot quicker if you're open to receiving. You're a little bit stubborn in your belief systems.
Ma'am. Yes, I want to release those limiting beliefs, you know? Definitely.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay.
Have a great night. Thank you, everyone.
Is this Sydney?
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, Cindy.
Hello? Hi, it's Sydney, S-Y-D-N-E-Y. But can you tell me
Sydney, like in Australia.
Yes, like Sydney, Australia.
Okay.
I've been there, too. Okay, can you tell me what my soul purpose is, and who is that speaks to me?
You mean someone speaks to you that's trying to guide you?
Yeah, that gives me information.
That's your higher self.
That's my higher self? Okay.
Your higher self, yes. Your higher self constantly tries to get your attention and give you information. You don't always trust it. You don't always trust the information.
Well, I do kind of listen, but maybe I may go left instead of right sometimes.
Well, the thing is, exactly, you might want to listen a little more clearer, and you'll get clearer information and then trust it, because your higher self is never going to give you information that's not going to serve your higher good.
Uh-huh. Got it. Okay.
Would you like to be in control of things,
Do I?
You like to be in control of things.
Possibly. Okay, can you tell me what my soul purpose is for coming to this planet?
I will definitely try to tell you, and of course, we're on this planet because we're on a healing journey. That's our soul's purpose, really.
Well, let me tell you, I remember when I was nothing but light, and this light told me it was time to come to planet Earth, and I recall falling through the dimensions and ending up in my mother's womb and looking around at the life I'd chosen, and I didn't want to come out of the womb.
Well, because the reason why your soul's purpose was to reclaim yourself. Your soul's purpose was to come into, you came into a challenging life, and that was to force you to grow spiritually, mentally, and emotionally. And you have done some of that. You still have more to do it. You still doubt yourself on your journey. So you have to open up more and allow more light and more love into your life so that you can stand in your own power.
Ah, I'm not in my power?
You are in your power. We're all in our power, but we're often afraid to exercise it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Oh, tell me one thing. I can't meditate, and I've had about 5 accidents where I've totaled 5 Lincolns because I fall asleep driving, and I can't meditate because I fall asleep. Why do I do that?
Well, why would you fall asleep? Why would you meditate driving in a Lincoln? I'm going to be funny. Park the Lincoln and meditate.
Well, I had to go be someplace, go to work, and I, you know, long distance, and I'd fall asleep. Every time I get, when I was, my kids were little, they said every time mommy sees the double lines on the highway, she's asleep.
Well, that could be true, because that, yeah, you could have the white line fever, but I would definitely suggest practice meditating when you're not in the Lincoln, unless it's parked.
Well, but if I try to, if, okay, I got it. But if I try to meditate here, sitting at home in this chair, I fall asleep.
Okay, let me tell you what that's about. That's resistance.
Oh, okay.
Resistance, okay? So one of the best ways that you might be able to do that with that is walk around, do mindful meditation around the house when you're doing whatever chores or whatever you're doing. Bring something into your mind that you want to concentrate on and just be mindful of being in your body and whatever you're doing at the time. So you won't fall asleep. There's too much activities going on to make you go asleep. Oftentimes, if you sleep in a meditation, it's resistance. Because spiritually, most of us are lazy. So it takes a lot of, you know, meditation to me, I just close my eyes, and if I can't see it, I visualize it. That's meditation to me. I don't have to go into a deep place to do it. Nobody does. You just have to have an intention. When you want to meditate, put out your intention, what it is you're trying to achieve.
Okay.
Okay. And that will help you get grounded and get focused. But please don't do it in the Lincoln.
Okay.
Do you still drive Lincoln?
I'm sorry?
Do you still drive a Lincoln?
Well, no, I have a Ford now.
Okay. Well, just don't drive and meditate, okay? Or don't put anything on in the car that's going to relax you to where you're going to sleep.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And we have Carlton.
Didn't we just have Carlton?
Yes, I think so.
Is he the same Carlton?
Hello, Carlton.
Yes, it is. Yes, can you hear me? Can you hear me okay?
Are you there?
We must have dropped him off.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can.
Are you the same Carlton?
You can hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Yes, it is. I told Doug, I said, well, don't connect me unless there's a line open. And so that's on here. Hey, listen, I'll keep it brief. But I just thought a little bit more because you said, hey, I love challenging questions. So whether it's Star Family, Ancestral Realm, the Angelic Realm, can you please tell me if there is somebody, an entity in particular that is trying to get through to me and I'm not picking up what they're telling me? Because I don't want to block any messages.
Okay.
Is that a fair question?
Well, you do have some. I think there's about 3 beings from a very far away planet. I'm asking for the name of the planet. But you are resisting them because you have a history with them and you didn't like what they told you before. So you do resist them. So, and they are from, oh my goodness, it's in another universe. I don't get the name of the planet right now, but it's in another universe. What I am being told to tell you is to sit down with your pen and paper and open up a little bit and write down what comes to your mind. The intention is that you want to listen to them and say, I'm going to sit and listen and let me get the message. And that way it'll keep you grounded enough to where you won't resist it as much. And then whatever comes into your mind, regardless of what it's going to look like or sound like, or whatever you write it down.
Right.
Okay. And it'd be interesting to hear about that the next time I'm on. There's one particular, there's one particular huge, big spirit that's on that planet, and his name is Owen.
Like now, you've had other,
You've had other lifetimes with Owen before. And you've done battle with each other. But he's trying to get in touch with you. So call on Owen and then write down whatever he brings to you. Okay? Is he gone?
Any special way I need to do that? Just sit down. Just sit down and be quiet. Do I need to light a candle or, you know, incense, anything
that's
like that? That would help.
That's, none of it is necessary, but if that's what you like to do, do it. Absolutely. We all have our little rituals, the way we do things, and you don't have to deviate from that at all. So you could be driving in your Lincoln and you might say, okay, Owen, what do you got to say? So whichever way...
Okay, so it's my choice to...
It's your choice.
Whatever I need to do to feel comfortable.
Yes. The suggestion that I'm getting for you to do it, because it will help you concentrate, it'll help you focus on the pen and the paper, and you'll be able to receive the message by doing that.
Thank you, Ms. Alina. Anything else I should listen to?
All the rest of us. Okay. Well,
hey, that's why I called back.
Well, I'm happy that you did, because I learn all the time. When people talk to me, I learn all the time. So it's wonderful to talk to people.
Great.
Yep.
Yes,
we talk
and
to
even
anytime
better,
to call in.
Even better when I listen, so thank you.
Well, you know, we all are challenged with that. We all have to practice that.
Yeah. Yeah, there, and just so you know, there's a little bit of a time delay on the call, so that's why. I hope you don't think I'm speaking over you. There's just a little bit of a time delay between our responses.
Oh, that's fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
That's not the problem.
Well, thank
you,
Carl.
These multi-dimensional, these multi-dimensional situations are.
Yes, I do.
All right, thanks, lady.
You're welcome.
We have Commander Rendy next.
Hi, Commander Andy.
Greetings. Hi, Omina.
Hi.
I have a kind of challenging question for you.
Okay.
In the morning, I've been hearing a female voice call my name. What I'd like to know is, who is it, and how do I answer her back?
Well, your mother comes into mind.
My mother's still living.
Well, that doesn't mean she can't talk to you. What's your name?
Wilma.
Well, Wilma's trying to get your attention for some reason. You might, is she near you?
She just turned 93.
Well, God bless her. I think she's trying to get your attention because she needs to talk to you about something. So her higher self would come and talk to you.
Okay, that's very interesting.
Well, that's what I get. So, that's what
okay,
I can tell
well,
you.
I'll try to call her in the physical then. Okay.
Well, that might be a good idea. She might be trying to figure out when she wants to leave the Earth.
Oh, I've been actually thinking a little bit about that. I've been getting a vision of that happening in the next little while here, but not.
Well, that's
strong.
Why she's calling you.
Okay. Next question.
Yeah.
How do we deal with the intensities and some of us are really affected by the solar flares. So how can we tone the energy down, or can it be done?
You mean you're affected by the solar energy of the Earth?
Oh, big time. I have the solar energy from the sun, the solar flares. I have such intense headaches I can hardly function.
I don't think the... okay, let me just look. You're very sensitive to your surroundings. It has something to do with your diet. You're eating something, it looks like it's a root vegetable that's causing you, it's throwing your whole body balance out of order. Root vegetables, what part of the country do you live in where they have root vegetables that might be different?
I'm living in Thailand right now.
Huh?
Do I eat ricks?
Do you eat beets?
Nope.
Good.
Did you hear him say he's in Thailand?
Oh, you're in Thailand?
Yeah.
Well, stay away from all that hot, spicy food.
I don't eat touch any of it.
Good, because it's not good for you. But I bet you're inhaling it somewhere around. There's something in your environment that's putting your energy off balance. You need to be in a cool place. You need to think cool. You need to, it's like your physical energy in your body is on fire.
All the time.
So you have to ground yourself. What they're telling me to tell you is that you need to ground yourself. You need to anchor yourself down. And you need to, pull in your energies. Your energy is a little bit scattered all over the place, so you need to pull them in.
Okay.
Amina, what is it about mint that might help?
Peppermint would be better.
Okay.
Even
Can
if
you
it's
repeat
peppermint
that again, please?
Tea. Peppermint tea would be better.
Okay.
You need something.
Okay, thank you, Amina. My phone is beeping. Go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry.
Go to an herbalist and have them tell you about your energies, and they will make up a tea or something like that to help you balance it. You are a very strong male essence, and it's overpowering all your other energy. I don't know if it's too much chi. Does that make sense to you? Chi is an energy?
Yes, yes.
You have too much of it in your body. And of course, I'm not, okay. You know, I don't understand Chinese medicine too much, but for you, it might be well worth your while to visit a Chinese herbalist if you could.
Okay, that's great.
And
hey, namaste, everyone.
Sorry?
I said namaste, everyone, because my phone's beeping telling me I am out of time.
Okay.
So, thank you very much, and everybody
thank
have
you.
A great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Thank you.
And now I see Brenda.
Hello.
Hi, Brenda.
Hello. I'm from Canada, and I have a question asking what my soul purpose is. And what planet or dimension am I from?
I'm getting that you're from Sirius.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And your soul's purpose? Oh, you're paying back a lot of karma in this lifetime.
Oh.
That's your soul's purpose in this lifetime. You're balancing out your karma. So you are probably, in some type of service to people.
Yes, I am.
Yes, that's paying off your karma.
Okay, that sounds good. I'm wanting to build or have a healing clinic. Is there any possibility that that will succeed?
When you're ready, there is a big success. You have to be very clear on what it is, and what kind of healing you want to do. Because it hasn't come to you yet because you haven't fully decided what it is you want to do.
I do a great number of different healings right now.
Well, that's the thing. You want to look at all the different healings and find out which one brings you the most joy and gives you the most passion and compassion, and that's the one that'll build a center.
Okay.
You can teach all the rest of them.
Oh, that's what I'm aiming for. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay, and if there's anything else you have to tell me, that would be fine. Otherwise, thank you so much.
No, I would say keep on doing your journey. Look at all the healing modalities that you do, but do use the one that brings you the most joy, the most compassion, and the most passion. and ask for help with you get zeroing in on that, and then you'll be able to teach some of the other people to do it, and that's going to help your center, manifest your center.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Merry Christmas to you, and namaste.
Thank you.
Namaste.
Same to you.
You know, I have had three people in the last 2 weeks, 10 days to 2 weeks, that have told me I'm changing careers.
Yes. And you are.
Okay.
Isn't that exciting?
It is. I think, I mean, I have some guesstimate of maybe where I'm going, but I choose to know how to put it together.
Well, it hasn't all been revealed to you yet. They're sort of downloading it a little at a time.
Okay.
So you just have to be aware when it comes to you and either write it down or put it somewhere where you'll remember it, whether you talk, you know, talking to a tape to remind yourself or write it down. But what they're saying is that you're not ready for the whole picture yet, but they're downloading a little at a time.
Okay. Can you give me any clues?
I'm asking. Some of it has to do with your music. A lot of it has to do with your music, actually. And also, you're going to be changing in directions of what you're going to be teaching.
Okay.
The teaching will be part of healing and spirituality.
And what about the farming and teaching people how to do this without chemicals and stuff? Is that going away, or is that
still? It doesn't look like it's going away, but you may be changing directions from it in terms of the new information that's going to come. What they're saying to tell you is that just allow it to happen, because if you do, it's going to become in a natural way that you'll be happy with it. And maybe that you will be letting go of a lot of that.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that you will be out of it. You won't be out of it. It just means that you won't have to be as involved in it as much as you are now, because you have to make room for the new stuff that's coming in.
Okay. Well, it looks like we've about come to the end of our hour.
So fast.
What would you like to say in closing as a general thing for people? I know you said you were going to be publishing this book. Of course, we want you to let us know when you have that ready so that we can
Absolutely. I have a wonderful person that came into my life recently that's going to help me with all of that, because I definitely need the help. So that's going to happen there. And of course, you'll all know about it, because I'll give you all a copy.
Okay.
In parting, I would say that everybody have hopefully tried to have happy and safe holidays, and just hold the love in your heart for everybody you know, especially for families and friends, whether they're your enemies, like them or don't like them. You don't have to like anyone to love them. You just have to love them. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would wish. And also, if you're anybody that has any subjects that you'd like me to bring up in any future times when we spend together, please feel free to let me know. And we can do that, you know. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do next month, but I might be doing it on archangels and all what they do for us. I don't know. They might give me a different message to do.
Okay. Well, if you have a request, you can send it to Stargate.
Yes.
Marita, M-A-R-I-E-T-T-A, at Gmail. And I will forward it and make sure that Omina gets your message. So if you have questions or suggestions or things that you would like to have her discuss and share with us, and I know we always have a good time when we have an opportunity for people to call in and ask questions, that makes the time, like you said, the hour goes by very quickly. So,
and it's wonderful to be able to help people when they do call in or give them the information that they might need.
Exactly.
So one way they can get a hold of me at my phone is 860-871-6076. You can go on my website, Omena, 777.com.
Better do the phone number again now that people have their pencil.
860-871-6076. My email is ominacenter777@gmail.com.
Okay. Well, we thank you so much for being here, and we look forward to your next visit. And like we say, if you have things that you want to say or you want to call in even before then, why we're always open to suggestions. And we're very grateful to have you be a part of our Stargate Roundtable.
Well, I am delighted and honored. I will talk to you all soon, and have safe and happy holidays.
And we didn't mention that she gave you phone numbers and emails, but you can get a private reading and a private session with Omina as well if you choose to do that. So that's why we gave the phone numbers and everything, so you can have a private session if you choose. Okay.
Thank you,
Sita. Mm-hmm. Maka to you, Omina.
Thank you.
All right.
Happy.
Well, shall we take a musical break here, or do you want, Tara and Rama, do you want to go straight into the next session?
We can take a musical break. I think Dougie will be all right if we go just a little bit over.
Okay. Well, if you would, please, Music Maestro, and we will be back in just a few moments. Welcome back, everyone, to the last segment of our Stargate Roundtable. We're happy to have you stay with us, and Tara and Rama will be in charge of this last hour, so I pass the talking stick to them.
Well, thank you, Sister Marita, Robert. I just wanted to mention real quick that Bernie Sanders was endorsed in the last little bit by three major unions. The Communications Workers of America Union, the National Mercers United Union, and the National Post Office Union. Oh, and there's one more. Sorry, the Democracy for America Union.
What's the Mercers? I'm not Mercers. How do you spell it?
Sometimes they don't spell things on the news, and I guess.
Oh, okay. All right. That's fine.
You know, that happens sometimes.
Okay. I just didn't know what that was.
Well, I know that there's a lot. I think it's a research thing, because Mercers is major problem in the hospitals. Mm-hmm. It's killing people.
MRSA. MRSA. MRSA is the what the problem is.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a whole union of researchers that are trying to eliminate the problem.
It's, and then the first
mostly
one
get it in the hospitals.
What?
The
first one that you mentioned was
the Communications Workers of America, CWA.
So that is that radio people, or is that other kinds of communication? What does that mean? Do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, that'll be something we can all look up, and then we can do roundtable the next time, or if somebody knows this evening and wants to call in, but remind you all that this is Roundtable, and we're all supposed to contribute what we can. So here's an opportunity.
Yes, it certainly is. And, you know, I would imagine that there's a lot more that could be done to get Bernie out there,
there is a very concerted effort to not put him on the main media.
There's a bit of a blackout.
Oh, blackout is right.
Donald gets plenty.
Huh?
Donald gets plenty.
Donald gets plenty. Yeah, well, he can have his kind. Okay, so, and then there was another interesting thing. There's this Tyrannosaurus Tristan. It's a T-Rex, and they called it the T-Rex from Hell, meaning Hell Creek, Montana. So there. And it's 12 meters plus long. That means at least 36 feet. I understand from Pamela that a meter is longer than a foot. I mean, than 3 feet. By
39 inches.
Oh. Three extra inches there. Okay. Uh-huh. So 3 12s are another 36 inches. So it's actually 13 feet. No, 15 feet. 12 meters is 15 feet. That's amazing. That's a long. Did I get that right? No, it's 39 feet. Is that what, 39 inches? Did you say 39 inches? Yeah. So it's 39 feet. 12 meters is 39 feet long. Wow. That's huge. And that he suffered, they say, a toothache. And so he was much more ill-tempered than even normal dinosaurs. And his bite has a 5-ton force. And he bites down. And his skull is the most intact of any T-Rex that they've ever found anywhere. And it's being exhibited now in Berlin, which is delightful to the owner of the antique. I guess is what it is. So I just thought that was interesting. So I just share that with you.
There has been a special on PBS about that. So if you can go search there, you'll be able to see a lot more information about it.
Oh, good. Okay. Thank you. All right. Well, we're going to do something unique tonight. We're going to air an interview from Killer Mike of Black Lives Matter in Georgia with Bernie Sanders. And it'll be about 56 minutes, so we better get started since we're way down in here this time here. We just went wild here. So, Rama, you got it ready there.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that Sanders is nowhere out of the woods at all. He's, you know, there's some major things happening here with him. And the other thing I was going to say is that, I guess one more thing is that that $279 trillion lawsuit
that the Alaska judge is challenging the government, let's just say this is all
that money's going to disappear. Completely
all
gone.
All this is coming from are these extreme right-wing folks who have one thing on their mind. They want to remove the black guy and his family from the White House because they consider him less than human. And it's a whole long story that goes into the realm of Phil Gramm and Wendi Gramm, who funded the Tea Party with their Nasara blessings, which is a whole long song and dance where Saint Germain is going to, let's just say, you know, I put it in Saint Germain's hands rather than say anything else.
Okay, so this is called Talking Shop with Bernie Sanders, Economic Freedom, Killer Mike.
And we did get some help from our roundtable members. That union we were speaking about, Debbie said her husband was a member of that, and he worked for Verizon. So that when we're talking about communications, that may be just some clarity on that. So thank you for our people in the roundtable participating. That's what we like.
There we go. Thank you, sister, whoever.
Sister Debbie.
Sister Debbie. All right, here we go. Let's get started with this.
Hey, 1 second, man.
Okay. Am I talking into a camera or am I just talking to the senator?
Just talk to the senator.
All right. We talked on the phone, but great to meet you. My name is Michael Render.
Nice to meet you. Bernie Sanders.
Thank you. I'm professionally known as Killer Mike. I rap, and I rap about a lot of the stuff that you ran about. And I want to talk about that. I'm a kid that grew up on the west side of Atlanta, not far from here. Working class community, I like money. I've always considered myself a capitalist. I've always tried to invent ways to make money. I remember stuff would fall off the back of a truck. We get it. We come to school, sell it, whether it was toys, candy, or whatnot. And out of the stuff that I got, or when my grandpa and I go fishing, we catch extra fish, or if one of the neighbors would grow at the time in my community, people still grew stuff, had chickens in the backyard, stuff like that. You kill a chicken or get eggs, you take it and share it with other people.
We still have chickens in the backyard in Burlington, Vermont.
I definitely should take a visit. But I say that because although I consider myself a capitalist and I wanted to make money young, there was a certain compassion to it. There was a compassionate capitalism of sorts in which I understood I was a part of a bigger community. So the lady, Miss Ruby, whose yard I used to cut for $25, I cut her front and backyard. When she started paying me less, and I complained to my grandmother, and my grandmother explained to me that she didn't have the money she used to have. She didn't have the money she used to have because her Medicaid somehow got affected. But I stayed doing the job because I knew that her yard needed to be cut. It deserved to be cut. She deserved to have the dignity that she had always had. And then I started learning about, in high school, tentaments of other political systems besides capitalism, socialism, communism, what a despot is, you know. And socialism, although preached in a very scary way, boogeyman-like way, to citizens of this country now, is not foreign. You were born in 1941. Essentially, Franklin Delano Roosevelt was still president. The things that he was proposing at the time, like Social Security, things of that nature, were considered socialism taking us on the road to communism. And I think that's something very mean and damn near evil that's said when you're talked about, because it doesn't represent what I think your real philosophy is, and people of my community, my ethnic community, haven't had an opportunity to hear you simply say, these are the things I think. So what is socialism, and what does it mean to the black community?
All right. What it means to me, what it means to the black community, what it means to the American community is the understanding that when we talk about rights, right?
Yes.
You have freedom of speech. You can go out on the street corner and give a speech.
Absolutely.
You have the constitutional right to do that.
Absolutely.
But you know what? To be truly free, you need economic rights as well.
Absolutely.
All right? So you can go out and give a speech, but you don't have any food in your stomach. You don't have a house, roof over your head. You don't have any education. Are you really free? And I think that in the richest country in the history of the world, Mike, which is what we are right now, we can do infinitely better in providing economic rights to our people. So when I talk about democratic socialism, this is what I say. You have a right, regardless of your income, to health care.
Yes.
I believe that. Whether you're rich, whether you're poor, you're old, young, black, white, you have a right to health care. You have a right to have an education. And I think in the year 2015, you have a right to have free tuition in public colleges and universities if you have the ability. I don't think if you're poor, you should be denied that education.
Absolutely.
All right? I think you have a right to have a decent job that pays you a living wage, and you can't make it on $7.25 an hour, which is why we have to raise the minimum wage, why we need pay equity for women workers. So what I am talking about when I talk about democratic socialism is to make sure that in the richest country in the history of the world, which is have right now, that everybody at least has a minimal standard of living and some dignity as a result of that.
So at the end of the day, people want to get paid a fair wage.
Exactly.
Because people get paid a fair wage, people get to have fairer living conditions.
Absolutely.
People get to spend more time at home with their children, which gives children a bonus of confidence of, I should go to school and perform well, because now I have a parent that's in the household that can help me.
All right, Mike, you're making a huge point, which we don't talk about all that often. When I was growing up, 400 years ago, do you know that one person in those days, often the man, could work 40 hours a week?
Absolutely.
And provide for the family?
Absolutely.
And today, what are you seeing all over America? You're seeing husbands and wives working incredibly long hours.
Absolutely.
Are they spending the time with the kids that they should be spending?
No. They can't.
They can't. So the kids are hanging out in the street corners.
Yep.
Kids are getting into trouble.
Absolutely.
And on it goes. And again, in the richest country in the history of the world, we should not be having the highest level of childhood poverty of almost any major country on earth.
But I guess, Senator Sanders, like, where are people not seeing the connect? Like, to me, all these things are interconnected. I grew up organizing right down the street with a group of suburban kids, rowdy gang member kids, regular BNA student kids, C&D kids, right down the street, led by a woman named Alice Johnson from Chicago. And she introduced me to the tenets of social justice.
Good.
Right? I didn't know what social justice was. We all were just like, we're out here trying to live. What is social justice? And my first lesson of social justice was she organized on the behalf of the Atlanta Fulton Commission on Children and Youth with a woman named Jean Charles Young, Andrew Young's late wife. And she said, there's no way I'm going to organize on the behalf of kids and not have kids a part of that process, not have kids a part of that talk. So you seem to be the only candidate that is inclusive of ideas that you just can bring to the table, ideas other people. Like, I'm literally here on a tweet. I'm here because I tweeted, I thought your ideas were progressive and I'd love to have a conversation with you. And the response is that you're here. That's a very different narrative than anyone running for a national office, especially U.S. president. You are different. Why? Am I starting right now?
Yep, and I'm ready. Fred, you ready?
Rolling.
Great. And Jess, you ready?
You are different. Why? Because you are certainly shrewd enough to be a politician of a different manner. You're certainly smart enough and have been here enough moons to know how to properly take advantage of the political system.
Let's back it up.
But why?
Yeah, I am different.
Why?
Because I never got into politics. See, a lot of people get into politics and they say, okay, I'm 24 now. Where will I be when I'm 30?
Yeah.
Maybe by the time I'm 54, I can run for president of the United States. They got it all calculated.
Gotcha.
All right. I ran for office the first time in my life for the United States Senate in the state of Vermont. You know what percentage of the vote I got, Mike? Like a wild and crazy guess.
15, 20?
Nah. 2%.
I'm really going to guess that.
All right. Now, would I be a smart politician to run on a third party, not the Democratic yeah. Party, not the Republican Party, running on a small third party, talking about, in those days, social and economic justice and the war in Vietnam? Yeah. All right? So I was a different type of politician. Then I ran a year later. You know what I got? 1% of the vote. I was going in the wrong direction. All right. So I think it's fair to say that my political career is different than anybody else's. Yep. Because I didn't get politics to figure out how I could become president or a senator. I got into politics because I give a damn. Yep. All right? Because I do think it is an outrage. People sleeping out on the streets in this country. The 51% of young African-American kids are unemployed or underemployed. The millions of people don't have any health insurance. That's what I feel in my gut. And that's what I'm fighting to change. Is that a good answer?
That is a good answer. That's an answer that I think people need to hear. I trust old people. I'm going to be very frank. Not all old people.
Well, I'll talk to some old people. I myself, as a young person, I respect old people myself.
I say that because my grandparents raised me. I was raised by people who were born in 1922 and 1932. The government, it was radically different.
than young people.
Absolutely.
You know, their relationship to government was one that was always fluid. They understood that change would come. They understood that you weren't always going to be happy, but their thoughts and concerns were bigger than their individual needs at every given hour. And it seems that in my lifetime, I'm an old man by my sport. I rap. 40 years old is an old age in rap. Luckily, I'm still relevant for whatever reason, but I've been around long enough to see this country be a very, very selfish country. Very, very selfish. I saw steel leave, the industry leave in the 80s. I saw arts and trades get pulled out of public schools. So we have children that are not only not graduating and going to college, but kids who are graduating and don't know how to build a wall. Kids who don't know, who used to do auto body mechanics and auto repair and aviation. We lost a whole brain trust of service, yep, and, you know, of people simply before our own greed.
And not to mention that we have more people in jail.
Exactly. I was going to get to that.
Okay.
So I want to talk about that. But have you in your 74 years in this great country seen Americans become more immature, more money consumed, more greedy, more self-absorbed? And is this taking us in a direction where we're destroying the democracy or the republic that we want everyone else to emulate?
Hey, you said a mouthful. I mean, that's a lot of stuff. And the answer is yes. But I wouldn't say it's all Americans. I would say we have a culture now. Look, there in America, in the world, there's always been rich and poor, right?
Yeah.
It's always been boss and worker.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, there was some kind of social contract that said, you know, I own the company, I'm making money, I'm going to share it with you.
Yeah.
Right? I make more than you do, but you're going to get something.
Yeah.
What you got right now, this is the culture. I own a company, I'm making money. I can make more money by going to China.
Yeah.
Throw you and your family and everybody else who works for me out on the street. I don't give a bloody damn.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter to me. I can avoid paying taxes by putting my money in the Cayman Islands and not pay a nickel in federal taxes. All right? I don't care that we have a deficit. I don't care that we need decent revenue coming in. I can avoid paying taxes. I have no responsibility to anybody else other than myself. Is this what's going on the top? Absolutely. You saw the whole Wall Street business. Their greed and illegal behavior helped destroy the country. Do you think they gave a damn? Do you think they stayed up nights worrying about it? No. So what you got on top is incredible greed. I don't think it's pervasive. I don't think everybody in America is like that.
Yeah.
But that's the culture of the people on top. Greed is their mantra. It's what they believe. And we got to change that.
But it seems to be like what the former middle class is worshiping now. Like, you know, when you look at television, when you know, I hate the name. Well, you look at Fox, you look at CNN, you look at MSNBC, because a lot of times I don't even see the difference between newscasters. But it seems that we are in, people are voting against their own best interests.
Yes.
When people vote against your socialist rhetoric, they say, like, they're, like the people that commented on my Instagram, for instance, when I said I was going to be at your rally today and we're going to have this conversation, they're calling leaders of socialism, communism, my kids. And I'm thinking to myself, but you're a former veteran who doesn't get the proper medical benefits that you deserve through the VA. You're a former veteran who doesn't own a home because you don't have the proper incentive. The government and banks don't have the incentive to make you a homeowner like post-World War II if you were a white veteran. It was different from black veterans. But you don't have the basic rights that he's trying to give you, but we have such a worship or a theory that I'm going to be a millionaire one day. What if that one day never comes? What looks after you then?
That one day is not going to come. The vast majority
I don't
of people,
think so,
some people do. But the two questions, even if it does come,
yeah,
is that what you think society should be about? Would you rather live in a community where everybody was doing pretty well?
Yeah.
Rather than a community where you had people out on the streets and some people making billions?
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
So that's the main point. Second of all, you know, I think that in terms of our campaign, you know, we started, if I were to be here in Atlanta 7 months ago, I would say that 80-90% of the people in Georgia did not have a clue as to who Bernie Sanders was. So I'm feeling pretty good about our campaign. We have made a lot of progress. We still have a long way to go. I'm running against a woman who's probably the best-known woman in the United States of America, all right? It's a tough fight, but we're doing pretty good.
You brought it up. I wasn't going to mention Hillary, and I'm not going to talk long. But are we in this country in danger of creating essentially monarchs of political families? My cousins in South Carolina are now aware of who you are. My cousins-in-law are like, calling me, like calling my wife, who's from Savannah, Georgia, and family.
We were just in Savannah yesterday.
You brought it up. I wasn't going to mention Hillary, and I'm not going to talk long. But are we in this country in danger of creating essentially monarchs of political families? And is that danger? I think it is.
Okay. Here's what the story is, in my view. Here is, you're putting your finger, although I disagree with you just a little bit.
Okay.
On a huge issue.
Okay.
All right. What does democracy mean? Democracy really means, it's not a complicated idea. It's everybody has input, everybody votes, right?
Yeah.
That's what it means. One person, one vote. What you got now is a economy which is largely rigged in the sense that almost all of the new wealth and income is going to the top 1%.
Gotcha.
Okay. And you have an incredibly unequal distribution of wealth.
Gotcha.
Okay. That's what the one reality. And then you got another reality. And the reality that the folks who have the money, they're not putting that money under their mattress. They want political power. So as a result of this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision, billionaires can now buy elections. So they can spend as much money as they want. And that's what's happening. When you have one family, like the Koch brothers, it's an extreme right-wing billionaire family, they and a few of their friends are going to spend $900 million on this campaign. That is more money than the Democrats will spend, more money than the Republicans. What does that sound to you? Does that sound like democracy?
Definitely is not. But it leads me to ask this. I have a lyric where I say, you know, could it be the man behind the man behind the man behind the throne? I consider you a good man with grand ideas. But that pessimism and apathy that seeps into my community, into the general American community, says don't go out and vote, because whether those brothers buy Hillary or buy Trump or buy something, the seat's for sale. How do we, I don't want to say how do we know you're not for sale, the seat's for sale. How do we know the presidency of the United States is not bought and paid for to the point where the grand ideas that you have that could help and radically change this country won't get stifled because of the money?
Well, first of all,
even if
every speech that I give, that's what I say. I say, hey, do you think Bernie Sanders can do it alone? I can't. Let's be very clear about this. The powers that be, Wall Street, corporate America, the corporate media, campaign donors. Do you think if I go into the White House and I say, hey, you know, Wall Street, I got a great idea. I think you should pay a tax on speculation so that I can put all of our kids into college tuition free. What do you think they're going to say to me? Like, hey, that's a great idea, Bernie. Why didn't we think of that idea? What they will do is go nuts, right? How do we beat them? You only beat them when all kinds of people stand up and say, you know what, you guys, you're going to have to pay a tax on speculation so that young people in America will have the opportunity to go to college. I can't do it alone. No president. So to answer your question, I don't think I can do it alone.
Gotcha.
All right. But your good question is, how do we get people involved? And people have been disappointed. People have been hurt. And when you talk about the media watching the TV, I got to tell you, I think in many respects, media does a awful job in educating the American people about the reality of what's going on. And they got a reason to that, too. You know something about the media, I suppose.
I do. You talk about the education of Americans. You seem to be the only politician that wants a smarter constituency. You seem to be the only politician that wants a smarter constituency. And now I understand why. Because you're one of the first politicians I've heard say it's a we. It is a collective of people. I believe that the people that got fired up in 2008 about Barack Obama, the ideas, not just the human being who's tall, slender, who had a cool-looking family like, you know, Cosby Show Part 3. It really was, he set forth ideas that we have been told for too long, don't wish that high. You are the natural evolution, I think, of our feeling. And I'm not saying he's part two of Barack Obama. No way am I saying that. I'm not saying that he's here to carry on a political campaign starting in 2008. No way saying that. I'm saying that the feeling that I had of the hope and possibility of change, you have come and voiced an actual policy that you're willing to push through for all of us to get behind. And why aren't people seeing it that way?
Mike, we are taking on the world.
Gotcha.
I mean, you know, we're taking on a corporate media which is much more interested in looking at politics as a baseball game or as a soap opera rather than dealing with the real issues. Here, let me throw it out to you. You tell me if you've seen this on TV. As a result of technology, the average worker in America is producing a lot more, correct?
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. Why is the person, everything being equal, earning less money? Good question?
Very good question.
Why is the United States the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee health care to all people? Good question?
That's a very good question.
All right. Is it moral that the top 0.1% owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%?
Absolutely not moral.
All right. Do you hear that discussion on CNN and NBC? Not too often. So what we are trying to do, and I'm very proud, we're going to have a whole many thousands of people out here in Atlanta. You know, we have 27,000 people out in Los Angeles. All right? People are beginning to hear it, but I'm not a fool, and I know you don't change this country overnight. But the main thing is, and let me repeat it, nothing happens unless people stand up. You know, I just visited Dr. King Center.
Yeah.
All right? What was that whole thing about? You think he said, hey, I'm Dr. Martin Luther King. I'm a really smart guy. I'm a great orator. I'm going to change the world. He was a profound organizer, correct?
Yes, sir.
That's what he did. And that's what we have to
do. You went to the King. You went to the King March. You went to the I Have a Dream March. You were there. Exactly. And you have consistently, you organized with SNCC. You did, like, that's a pretty...
I know, it makes it seem like ancient history.
Yeah, but that's, that is, that, I, on some rap language, that's some bomb shit. Like, that is absolutely...
Look, this is
dope.
What we felt. We were in the North. We were in Chicago. I was a student at the University of Chicago. What we saw, if I can use some bomb shit, is we saw our friends getting the shit kicked out of them and getting beaten to hell.
Gotcha.
All right, so we tried to get some money. They were the brave ones, not us. We got some money there. And in Chicago, what we worked on is the fact that the school that I went to, a great prestigious university, turns out that they own segregated housing. How's that? So you know what we did? We'd send a black couple in to an apartment. They go in and say, hi, do you have any apartments available?
No.
Sorry, we just don't. An hour later, we sent the white couple in. Oh, yeah, let me show you the three apartments that we have available. So we kind of exposed that. We made an impact. We got involved in segregated schools in Chicago. But the issue that I love most about Dr. King is not just that he helped lead the civil rights movement and destroy segregation and so forth. This man was an incredibly courageous man. You know why he was courageous? If you were sitting in a sense, all the media, everybody loved you, and you look at what you did, you got the Voting Rights Act, and you desegregated the South. What did he do next?
He appreciated the war in Vietnam and poverty.
That's exactly
about
right.
And then everyone turned their back on
him. And they said, you know what they said to him? They said, you are an African-American leader. Your job is to worry about civil rights. Who the hell are you talking about the war in Vietnam? Why are you talking about distribution of wealth? But because this guy was a brilliant guy, and this is what I love about him. He began, his mind grew and grew and grew. That's a smart person. You know what I mean? You don't stay in the same place your whole life.
Absolutely.
And he began to understand. Yeah, so we broke down segregation at a lunch counter.
Absolutely.
What the hell difference does it mean if you can't afford the hamburger?
Absolutely.
If you can't afford to send your kid to school?
Absolutely.
And if you're talking about nonviolence, and the United States in the war in Vietnam was the major perpetrator of violence, you're a hypocrite if you don't talk about it. He was not a hypocrite.
And
that is an extraordinary man.
And this is what I have wanted to get to. King is often, and it's not by accident we're in a barbershop. And it's not only because I own the barbershop and it's a great business promotional opportunity. Barbershops seem to be the only place in my life that black men in particular have been able to speak the truth and not worry about getting killed. It's a place where beyond black men, working class men can come speak the truth without worrying about the boss cutting them off at the job. A lot of union organizing started happening in the back of a barbershop or whiskey house, you know. You have been, besides Alice Johnson, who was a white woman, my friend and mentor, besides James Orange, who was an organizer with Dr. King, is featured in that movie they did about Selma, besides Joseph Lowery, besides Andrew Young, the people that I've met that I know from the Civil Rights Movement, you're the only person who has dared to talk about Dr. King's connectivity or connecting war and poverty with segregation and racism, with the economy, with workers' rights, with women's rights. You're the only one in my 40 years that I've seen do this on a national stage.
Where was Dr. King when he was assassinated?
He was in Memphis.
Doing what? He was supporting a union effort.
Absolutely.
To improve
Absolutely.
Wages and working conditions Absolutely. For people who were terribly exploited. That's
Absolutely.
What he was doing.
Absolutely.
And what was he working on? What was the big project that he was working on in the last months of his life? A poor people's march.
Absolutely.
Okay? That was not just African Americans. That
Absolutely.
Was whites. That was Hispanics, Native Americans.
And that's exactly what I'm getting to. You have been the only candidate that I have seen
able to connect people who were once disconnected in this way. And I believe the disconnection is something that is orchestrated. I believe it's something that's encouraged. I believe it's something that for the last at least 40, 50 years, there has been a political agenda to make sure that people choose teams. I often speak at colleges, and the number one thing I tell kids is they brought me here to talk about racism and to talk about police brutality because they know that's my box. I'm a black guy. I have to think about those things on a daily basis. But what I need you to do today, and I tell kids this, is to tell yourself as you come in the door, I'm going to put my team to the side. Look at how my team is interconnected with these other teams and how can we as individuals be different and help each other.
Let me tell you a story about that one, Mike.
Gotcha.
In the 1950s, what state in this country had the lowest paid white workers? What state? Take a guess.
I would imagine Georgia or Alabama.
Try Mississippi.
That makes sense.
Okay. What did the whole system tell these white workers who were the lowest paid white workers in the United States of America? In other words, these workers were being exploited. What they said is, you can go to that water fountain and drink, and the black guy can't. You can go to that bathroom. You can go to that restaurant. Man, you got it good. Yeah. Meanwhile, we're paying you nothing. So you divided blacks from whites. In this case, whites from blacks. And this is what they always do. Then they go and they say, see that woman up there? She's an uppity woman. She wants your job, man. You're not going to let that woman take your job. You got to divide from her. And that guy's gay over there, man. You got to hate him.
Yeah.
Going to destroy your marriage because he's gay. Got to hate him. Oh, and there's a person speaks with the Spanish, you know, a little bit Spanish.
Yeah.
Came from Mexico. You're supposed to hate them, man. You're not going to work with those people. That has been what the ruling class has done over and over again. Why? Because they understand when we come together, you fight for decent wages. When you fight for education for your kids, you fight to strengthen Social Security. We win, hands down. But if they divide us up, they win.
It's amazing, man, the Democratic Socialist guy uses the word we so much. And, you know, everyone else is saying the I or the your. You know, it's I have this or it's your problem. I just wish, man, that I wish to stay as angry as you. You know, there are days where I just say, well, you can be relaxed. You're gonna retire middle class. You know your kids are okay. And yet I find a new reason to get angry every year. And I used to think that it was going to kind of taper off. You know, I'd tell myself I'm going to retire to Jamaica in 10 years. But I know it's a lot. I know that whenever this thing I do called rapping is over and singing and dancing, that I'm going to be angrily shouting out of someone's office in Atlanta.
That's being human.
Yeah.
If you see stuff that's bad and you don't respond with, what did King call it, the fierceness of, the urgency of the moment or something, you know, then you're not alive. So don't lose that anger.
Sorry about that.
Okay.
We in the hood, pit bulls are rhyming like a DMX video. How great of effect did Dr. King have? Has he had on your life? It seems that you took up what he, and not just, you know, what pulled me to you was your Voters Right Act interview. Well, you talked about the restoration of the Voters Right Act, and I remember thinking to myself, who the fuck is this crazy white guy? Like, it didn't even make sense to me because I have lived in Atlanta all my life, and I've virtually heard no black politicians angry about it. I virtually hold no black politician outraged about it.
Let me tell you,
you were the only voice of outrage.
Let me tell you something. This is true. I am a fierce believer in democracy. You know what? I love democracy.
Yeah.
I love the fact that in this room somebody disagrees with me. They say, Bernie, you're full of shit. I'm going to vote against you.
Yes.
I love it. I love people thinking about what kind of future they want. And I feel, because I've been in politics for many years, running many elections, that these people all over America now, as a result of the Supreme Court decision to gut the Voting Rights Act, day after, they're sitting up thinking, all right, great, how do we deny people the right to vote?
Yeah.
They are cowards.
Absolutely.
They are cowards because they're afraid to contest a free and fair election. They can't win it. So they got to figure out, how do I come up with some cockamamie scheme to deny some little old lady the right to vote because she's going to vote against it? That disgusts me.
Yeah.
Profoundly disgusts me. So what we have got to do is in this country do what many other countries around the earth do. You're 18 years of age, you're registered to vote. Let's forget all the rest of the crap.
Yeah.
And if you want to commit voter fraud, you vote twice, you're going to pay a heavy price for that.
Absolutely.
Okay. But everybody has the right to vote. End of discussion. The other thing that I want to talk about, Mike, and I get back to the media on this, is that people think that some of the ideas that I advocate are very radical ideas. They are not radical ideas. I live, you ever got up to Burlington, Vermont?
I haven't been to Burlington. If at invite, though, I'll definitely.
All right, you're invited.
I'll come.
All right. We live 50 miles from the Canadian border.
Okay.
Okay? Canada, everybody has health care as a right. It ain't a big deal. They've had it for, I don't know, 50 years or so.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. Go to the UK. You've been to the UK?
Often.
All right. Everybody has health care. Go to Scandinavia. Everybody has health care. Go to Germany. Go to France. Everybody has health care. Why are we the only major country that doesn't have health care for all of us? Not a radical idea. Go to Germany. Kids in the United States are going to Germany. You know why they're going to Germany? They can get free tuition in college there.
Yeah.
In schools.
Absolutely.
All right. These are not radical ideas. So.
And you're not BSing because my rap partner and I, you know, run the Jewels. We travel the world. We've been around the world about four times now. We did 14 months straight. I spent my summer in Europe. And the first thing I ask Americans who preach fear of a one-payer healthcare system, for instance, I say, you ever been to Europe? Most Americans, God bless them, this is a beautiful country. We have every type of terrain, every type of weather you'd like. But if you've never been outside of the country, you have no way to appreciate, right, one, how great this country is, and two, how potentially great the country could be if we can make some subtle changes. And I see in Europe, I see other things working. And I'm wondering how long before we catch up, and why do we keep having to play catch up when we could see a good idea, say we can implement this idea. This is a way for us to make an American, but this is a worthy idea. Free healthcare for citizens makes sense to me. College makes sense to me because the smarter constituency you have, the smarter country, you don't have to worry about importing other smart people.
You got it.
You know, you're growing your own, and that way your imports are an addition and not a necessity to the point you're leaving yourself almost vulnerable. You know, how long before this country becomes or furthers the campaign of bullying until other countries are not willing to even cooperate with us? You know, so I don't get into the international politics of it all, but I travel and I see things that work other places and I know they would work.
Well, this gets back to the point you raised a little while ago about greed. You know, I don't have a problem with people making money. But I do have a problem with these guys who are worth billions spending a lot of their money and their time and their energy. You know what they're trying to do? To destroy Social Security. Yeah. You got people in this community trying to get by on $12,000, $13,000 a year. Why in God's name would somebody stay up nights trying to cut their Social Security benefits, cut their Medicare, Medicaid benefits? That's pretty pathetic.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've been around the world, you know that there are countries that do a lot better for the children, their great child care. Okay. Do better on health care, do better for seniors so when they retire they can live with a little bit more dignity and security than our seniors can. That's all I'm talking about. It ain't so radical.
There's an African proverb that says many hands make for light work. You know,
that's right.
And a lot of the tenements of socialism or social democracies are about, you know, everyone having some input. And I think that what people are missing from my community about not hearing your voice today, you're not saying, you know, Michael, sometimes we look up to rappers and athletes too much. And we think, and that's every, you know, every American looks up to the rich. You know, Lifestyle Rich and Famous was here long before rap, you know, in terms of the opulence. But a lot of times we think, well, those people earned that the right way, they got it. And they don't understand, now that I'm closer to being financially independent than I was, say, 5 years ago, my accountants give me different advice now. You know, I'm taught better ways to handle money that the regular public never gets an opportunity to have or see. You know, Fat Joe said, he was a rapper one time. He said, you know, I'm telling people to go out and vote, but I'm rich already. I'm okay. I don't even have to say this. I'm doing this for you guys. I need for my community to understand that your message directly impacts them. So I got to transition this conversation to prison, because some of the offers I've gotten to invest money in have been companies that supported private prisons. We have essentially, since Jim Crow in the South and the Chain Gang, which is big in Georgia, we have used prisoners essentially as indentured servants. I tell people, when I was a kid, I remember driving along the expressway in Atlanta was cleaned by black men who worked for the city or the county or the state, you know, because I'm from a black city. And then as I got older into my teens and in my 20s, I start noticing that those crews were disappearing. So city workers who had their union, who were paid fairly, who lived in the communities that they were cutting, who as a kid, you got an opportunity to see, if, you know, if I get out of high school, don't go to college, I still can get a good job. Those people started to fade. And And what I started to see was prisoners on the side of the road cleaning highways. And I thought you went to prison as punishment, not to be punished. And we haven't even gotten into the rehabilitation phase. But have we gotten comfortable as a country with Barack Obama being the first sitting president, I don't know how long, to actually enter a prison? Is this campaign to ratify prisons, to stop an illegal drug war that really targets a particular color, race, and class of people? Do you continue that? And how vigorous are you going to be in that? Because that directly affects African-American males in particular.
Look, what is happening to the young male and female African-American community is a tragedy almost beyond words.
Thank you.
Right. Now, we are talking about, people disagree on the statistics, but roughly speaking, one out of four black male babies born today, if we do not change it, will end up in jail. Can you imagine that?
Absolutely.
You are talking about a higher percentage of blacks in jail in America today than was the case under apartheid in South Africa.
Absolutely.
Do you believe that? All right. You are talking about hundreds of thousands or even millions of black men who no longer have the right to vote.
Absolutely.
Because they were felons.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you change that?
Oh, yeah, we change that.
So felons get a restoration right to vote. What about getting a job, Senator?
Felons, the answer is yes. My state, that's already the case. Felons can vote.
Wow.
Why?
You got places like New York, I own a barbershop. One of the best barber schools in the nation is in one of their prisons. Yet in places like New York and even Georgia, if you're a felon, it's harder, if not impossible, to get a barber's license.
Right.
So not only can you not go get a job working for a corporation that exploits you, you can't even be self-employed to produce for yourself because the state doesn't allow you to.
And this is a point that I think not a lot of people are aware of. They're saying, all right, it's one thing, you spent 10 years in jail, that's terrible. You got a police record, you said spent 1 year in jail, right? You go out looking for the job. Guy says, okay, tell me about it. You said, where were you last year? Well, I was in jail. Oh, yeah. Well, have a nice day. We don't need you here, right? You're finished. It's hard to make a living. It's hard to get credit. It's hard to do the things you need. And then what happens? Then you're off and running into drugs and something else, right? And it gets worse. So I think this is an issue that we have got to absolutely focus on. And it's not just reforming police departments. It's not only doing away with minimum sentencing. But it is also taking a hard look at the so-called war on drugs, which has destroyed many people's lives. So what have I done just recently for a start? As you know, the Controlled Substance Act, the Federal Controlled Substance Act, says that a Schedule I drug, it's marijuana, is the same as heroin. What do you think about that?
I'm a marijuana smoker. That is absolute bullshit.
Okay, of course it's crazy. Everybody knows that it's crazy. So we've taken, by legislation, would take marijuana out of the Controlled Substance Act completely. That means you're not subjected to federal prosecution. And if your state wants to go forward and legalize marijuana, as four states have, well, they're not going to have any impediments from the federal government. Do you know how many lives have been destroyed? Because you tell me.
Many I know. Many I know.
All right. People get smart possessing marijuana. What we also know, where it becomes a racial issue, is it turns out that whites and blacks utilize marijuana roughly equal in the communities. It turns out that's the case. Four times as many blacks are arrested for possession as whites. Becomes a racial issue. So I think, you know, this is an issue that we have got to absolutely deal with.
And I would love to see you just go on like a barbershop tour to say these things to black men in particular. Not because I think black men are a separate base that you have to speak to specially, but you know, we get discouraged, man, and we just don't go vote. You know, a lot of times when people are saying the Democratic vote is already, like people suppose the Democratic vote out of the state of Georgia and in Atlanta in particular is married to Hillary Clinton. That's what they said. I don't follow that thought. I think that there is a sleeping giant in this city of African-American men in particular and women who have had uncles, nephews, sons, husbands, fathers involved in the prison complex illegally, but, you know, formed by the state and those bullshit laws, I believe that there's a sleeping giant ready to wake up and support that candidate. And that's part of the reason I wanted to even sit here today. I need for people who look like me and who are sympathetic to people who look like me. You know, I have a lot of white friends that are staunch advocates for things that have no effect on their general community. Honestly, it's a little better. If all the roadblocks are on my side of town and none of the roadblocks on there, I'll get caught with weed. They never will. But they're adamant about helping to make sure that this gets fair. I think that there's a sleeping giant of voters, and I want to see, like, barbershops and Masonic lodges and mechanic shops light up.
Look, you're looking at a guy. I said, I love democracy. I've had more town meetings. You know what a town meeting is.
Yeah, absolutely.
In Vermont, we go to small towns with people. I do a town meeting. People come out. We talk. All right. You take me to the barbershops. I'll be there.
Pause right quick. If someone wants to shut that dog up, we can grab some dog food and throw something over the fence for him if that's getting you guys away. All right. Winston, you mind doing that? I remember when we first conversed, I talked about the importance of getting you in the South. You know, this is where your message needs to be and deserves to be heard. I want people to get out, get off their asses and vote. I want people to understand that our political process is something paid for in blood. As an American, before we get to the fact I'm a black man, the civil rights movement happened, people have died and courageously fought, walked across bridges in Selma, my home grandmother marched in Alabama. Before we get to that, this country is started as an act of political protest. Right. This country is started as an act. And I'll be damned if I don't encourage every friend of mine to vote based on the fact that we should be honoring that. If it should almost be like a religion to be a part of the political process in this country, because it transforms.
It strikes me that if you don't participate in the political process, you're really crapping on people who gave their lives to defend this country in World War II and elsewhere. And obviously, this country faces, obviously, the political system is decked on behalf of the wealthy. But that doesn't mean you walk away from it. It means you engage and fight back.
Absolutely. It's like I've had people I know get cancer in there. And I love them. You know, their decision, once you get cancer, your decision is your decision. There's some that have just, I've seen that just recline into themselves and just, I give up. I fight the fight. I fought the fight. I can fight them. And there are other people who get fucking angry.
Mike, you know why you don't have the right to give up? How many kids you got?
Four.
So it's not just about you. Yeah. Because if you give up, what happens to your four kids? What happens to my seven grandchildren?
Absolutely.
All right. So you don't have the moral responsibility. It's not your life. It's your kids' life.
Absolutely.
So we got to fight back. And here's the very good news. On issue after everything that we have talked about, the vast majority of the American people, white, black, Hispanic, absolutely, they're on our side.
I agree.
All right. How many people agree with Republicans who want to give tax breaks to billionaires and cut Social Security and Medicare? Should we take a long walk and see if we can find one person who agrees with that? And these guys may win the election because people don't vote and don't pay attention. That's what our job is.
The type of violence that I've seen, I played Mexico City yesterday, and I totally pulled a cheat card. I said, fuck Trump. And basically 20,000 Mexican citizens repeated it. But I just say that because I feel like that in my heart. I even tell that to Jesus Christ. But beyond that, how dangerous is it that a man just got beat up at his political rally? I mean, I saw two people storm your stage who were passionate and vehement about something that I adamantly care about. You know, the lives of all people, you know, black lives matter because all lives matter. You know, all lives matter, therefore black lives, Asian lives, homosexual lives, all lives matter. But you handled it with a grace and a tact that you didn't have to. You could have been pugilant, you could have been angry, you could have been dismissive, and you didn't. You stood there respectfully and you listened. So if no one else said it, thank you and congratulations, because I appreciate you not demeaning those two young women and allowing that. And I don't know if you've been thanked for that. But I saw Trump literally almost incite that. Have we gotten too far? Is it going to get worse because of the admiration for
people? We gotta move very aggressively. This is what happens. You got a lot of people in this country who are angry. And they're angry because their jobs went abroad. They don't have any money to take care of their family.
Yeah.
They don't know why they're angry, why things in their lives are going badly. There was a study that came out recently. I don't know if you saw it. It's front page of the New York Times. white working class families are seeing, men and women, are seeing a decline in their life expectancy. Do you know that? Their mortality rates are going up. Unemployment is high. They're doing drugs. Suicide, very serious problem. It's the white community, not the black community. Okay. People are angry and they're frustrated. So somebody like Trump comes along. And what does he say? He says, you're angry and you're frustrated? It's that black guy there. That's the guy.
Those Mexican immigrants.
And those, they're criminals and they're rapists. We got to keep them out. Or you know what? It's the Muslim across the street. You know that woman has the thing on her head? That's your enemy right there. And you play on people's fear and anxiety. This is the oldest story in the book. You know, it's the Jews and it's the Irish and the Italians.
It's McCarthyism again. It is.
Right.
It amazes me that people run from you as though he's a socialist, but they embrace Trump's philosophy that's gratuitous fascism. It is fascist to run identity checks on people, to essentially give them electronic scarlet letters. That is Mussolinian.
Yes.
That is Hitlerian. And yet no one is saying no. Like, no, this we can't do this. It's scary. You know, it's scary, Senator. It really is.
What's scary about Trump is he open. You see what happens. You have a lot of people out there who feel certain ways. And then you see somebody who's running for president say these things. Oh, Trump said that. I can say that. I could beat up the Muslim in my community. Right?
Right.
I could be a racist on a college campus now because that's the climate. You're right. It is scary.
What's your advice to young Americans? Like, what has kept you from 1961 forward? What has kept you from that college kid who organized, you know, with SNCC? I still find that amazing. What has helped you?
Why do you find that so amazing?
Because that's not the narrative we've been taught. I don't find it personally amazing. I find it amazing I didn't know you. I'm finding it amazing 20 years ago you weren't always already on my radar.
But that's because look, I'm known in my own state, 98% of the people.
But
nobody in Georgia knows me. The television is not particularly interesting.
But I should. I'm from the activist community. I should know you. Yeah. You should be. You know, in every black barbershop, there's two black guys and an honorary white guy. So when I was growing up, it was Martin Luther King, Jesus, and well, black Jesus in my shop, and Jack Kennedy. You know what I mean? So in my shop, like, you're really about to get the heralded position of the white guy. It's going to be like Martin, Malcolm, Bernie. And if you can stop and get water, we can.
Yo.
If you need whiskey, we got some in the back too.
Stay with the water for a moment.
I truly believe in your ideas. One of my very conservative friends, I'd say more libertarian, Shelley Winters, was a black guy. He did a phenomenal show here years ago on WALK. But I talked to him this morning because I consult both sides. I have very liberal friends. I have very conservative friends. I'm a capitalist that's backing socialist for president. I found that my politics is very mixed up because, you know, it's pragmatic stuff. But Shelley was saying, he said, Mike, make sure that you know that Bernie can win. Make sure that in your pressing to get his ideas out, that you're not pressing to make sure the ideas are out in case he falls out of the race, because he can beat Hillary and he can win his presidency. Now, this is a friend of mine who's conservative. This is a friend of mine who doesn't agree with all of my or your politics. But the ideas that you have talked about so greatly affect the community we're from. I can't say he's endorsed you, but he damn sure wanted to make sure that I provided people on the other side of that camera.
Let me say a word on that. What anybody who knows anything about politics understands is Democrats win when people vote.
Yeah.
Republicans win like they did last year
when
nobody votes. Okay. Right. Obama in 2008 ran a brilliant campaign. Not only did he win, he brought in a lot of people with him.
Absolutely.
Okay. What I can tell you is, I don't know how many people we'll have out tonight in Atlanta, maybe 5,000-6,000 people. Okay. We have brought out hundreds of thousands of people all over this country. We have more individual contributors than any candidate in American history, more than Obama at this particular point in the election. Okay.
Over 2 million now, everybody.
When you look at, we are generating excitement, and the only way Democrats win is when young people and working class people start coming out and voting. I think we can do that.
I've spoken at MIT this year. I've spoken at
Florida State University, spoken at Morehouse. I've been on many campuses this year. Every campus I've went on, there have been devout followers of yours, overwhelmingly in my audience. Can I talk about something we might disagree on?
Let's look.
I'm from the South. I like guns. I like guns a lot. I own guns. My father was a police officer and was a gun owner. He was a police officer. Also, Stewart, which is another reason I'm so on the bandwagon with you.
He was a union steward within the...
No, he was a union steward with the gas company after he left the police force. But I have a cousin, two cousins that are currently on the police force, and that both are police union members, too. So I support you wholeheartedly when it comes to unions.
Let's talk about guns.
And I don't want to... But guns... and I'm not saying how disgusting we make. I represent a group of people only 50 years into freedom. I represent a group of people who are being killed by the people who their tax money pays. I represent a group of people who are in urban areas because of poverty and because of being ignored by government in places like Chicago. Certain areas have become pockets of violence, less violent than 20 years ago. But it's certainly harder for if I'm a husband and a father and a homeowner to defend my homestead in case of things. What is your true stance to guns, speaking to my community directly now? Because we have a different view of gun ownership where I'm from.
Okay. Well, my state. Yeah. Do you know how much gun control there is in the state of Vermont?
How much?
None. Virtually none. Okay. In my state, what a gun means is you go out hunting. A lot of people hunt.
Here, too. Absolutely. I got some deer meat in the freezer.
All right. Let's sit down and eat it.
You should.
All right. So you got a lot of hunters. You got a lot of guys who do target practice. You got a lot of gun shows. People look to antique guns and stuff like that.
And I know you want to close those loopholes.
Right. All right. So here's the story. Do people have a right to own weapons? Of course they do. Okay. But what don't people have a right to do? Should somebody who has a criminal record or has a record of beating up his wife, should they be able to get a gun? I don't think so. So what you need is enforced and strong instant background checks. You got a problem with that?
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay.
And Bill O'Reilly can't own a gun, so that's good. Because we know what he does.
Yeah. So instant. Guy's trying to get me into real trouble here. I can see that.
I wanted you to be my president.
All right. And, all right, so you got instant background checks.
Gotcha.
Question, this is where we may disagree. All right, some guy walks down the street with an assault weapon, military weapon. Is he a right to have that gun?
I say yes, and I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
I really believe the part of the Constitution that says that's our last defense against tyranny. I believe that if you're involved in the voting process, that's your first defense against tyranny, to be actively and politically engaged. And I definitely believe, because I represent a group of people that's only 50 years into freedom. And I also represent a group of people where, if we judge by the last 2 years, it's okay to shoot them down in the street, whether you're an officer or not, based on the Zimmerman case down in Florida. And I don't want the people I pay to be able to own something I don't. And I do also know this about assault weapons or military-grade weapons. The AR-15 replica that I can buy from a Walmart is not the same thing a serviceman use. It's not fully automatic. I don't have oftentimes the magazine capacity they will. And, you know, more likely than not, I'm not going to be engaged in a situation where I'm actually using it. So I don't see the need to ban.
Well, that's one we disagree on.
Okay.
All right.
Respect.
All right. Next one, the gun show loophole.
Yeah.
All right. I think we got to end that.
I can't get mad at you for straw purchasers.
That's right.
Yeah. I can't argue.
So the gun show loophole is a way to avoid the instant background check.
It is.
And then you got another one is with the straw man situation. You go in there, you're perfectly legal, you buy 20 guns.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're giving out to...
I can understand closing
that's
the loophole.
Those absolutely. Are my views.
Absolutely.
That's it. So we disagree on assault weapons.
We do.
All right. That's fine. All right. I think what I want to do is to
try... And let me say this. That doesn't jump me off your boat. You know, for people who may see this conversation, that's not enough to get me off the Bernie Sanders bus. You know, and I'd just like other gun owners to know that.
Right. So, you know, I have gotten criticized, as you may know, by my opponents that I'm a hack of the NRA and all of that stuff. And that's
cool. And I'm an NRA member, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for
you. Okay. So that's where we are. All right.
They didn't send that question either. And I'm not a fan of Wayne LaPierre. Yeah. More of a fan of Colin Noore, the black guy they got over there. They got a great token black guy. He's a lawyer. He's young. He's smart. He's progressive. He probably may be secretly voting you. I hope he is. So, I mean, thank you for your honesty and your candidness on that, because I know that's another one of the things, or the things that people hold up to try to get people to be afraid of you. And after I read up on your stance, I pretty much knew it was liberal enough for me to say I could still go with this guy, because, you know, what happens if assault weapons do get banned, at the end of the day, still one of the only countries in the free world where citizens are allowed to own guns. And that, I'm not going to, that's something, as I do travel through Europe and places like that, that's one of the questions I get. I get two questions. I get, can you guys own guns for real? Yeah. And then I get, do you know Gucci Mane? You probably don't, but kids always want to know if I know Gucci Mane. I'm glad to have you here. I'm glad to have you in this city. I hope that this city, with the legacy of Dr. King, I figured you already went. We're looking at the top of Ebenezer Baptist Church there, not the historic one, but the new one. Reverend Warnock may be running for Senate. He's the only minister whose church I stumble into a couple times a year, because he preaches the same thing that you are doing politically, social justice. And I'd be interested to see more preachers from my community talk about social justice. I think that during the Bush years, somehow they got caught up in federal money. And I think that without the black church, the black community politically is suffering, because the black church used to serve as a place where organizing happened, and organizational tools were taught. And, again, I hope the black church kind of gets with your campaign also. I hope they see that the things you're talking about are the things that the biblical Jesus talked about. Look at your face. No one, yeah, that's not it.
Now you're going into another area.
But it's the truth of it. You know, you can't call yourself, and I'm not a religion. You know, I'm the guy in the back of the room smoking a joint saying, I wonder if anything is really out there. You know, I'm the guy that's just watching as much Carl Sagan as probably my Christian neighbors are watching Joel Osteen. So I can't promise you that I have faith in any of the three major Abrahamic religions in that. But I do know the philosophy of Jesus has so touched my community.
Do unto others
as you would have them do unto you.
That's about it.
So I hope that the church from my community gets behind, because what you're preaching, social justice, is what they're talking about on Sundays.
That is right.
All
right.
I know you're hungry. I'm not going to keep you here all day. We should grab food, I hope, and keep talking on some candid stuff.
Okay. This is great. I really enjoyed it. All right. We're going to continue this conversation.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, everybody, that was awesome to me anyway. Hope it was.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy. Get a movement going like that one. So, boy. I just say we're at this place where suddenly the stag looks away from us and to the left. Hadada, ibis, cries from direction of marsh where unicorn is staring. Simba! There's this unbelievable lion that's showing up here. This is all within real close range, everybody. There's Robert Vavra and his Maori guide and Unicorn, and now we've got Simba, says Daniel quietly, as a black maned lion emerges from the reeds and walks along the edge of water. Mother Alcyone. That's all for tonight, everybody. Thank you. And tomorrow is another day. And we are walking in a very amazing time. I am so grateful to be here with all of us. Nasara now, everyone. Namaste. Inshallah.
You say
Sat Nam Rama.
Sat Nam Ji.
And Music Man.